Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 29th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-pound. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in the Gospel of Mark. Okay, we're picking up in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1. We left off in verse 13, and at this point, Jesus was already tempted in for 40 days, and he came down from the mountain. We'll pick up in 14. Now, after that John was put in prison, Jesus came into Galilee, preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God, and saying, "The time is fulfilled, and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent ye, and believe the gospel." Now as he walked by the sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, and they were fishers. And Jesus said unto them, "Come ye after me, and I will make you to become fishers of men." And straightway they forsook their nets and followed him. And when he had gone a little further thence, he saw James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, who also were in the ship mending their nets. Also straightway he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the ship with the hired servants and went after him. And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority, and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." And Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Hold thy peace, and come out of him." And when the unclean spirit had torn him and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. And they were all amazed, insomuch that they were questioned among themselves, saying, What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commanded he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region around about Galilee. Okay, tonight's topic that we're going to be looking at is statutes, codes, and regulations. And as I mentioned last week, I'm going to try to keep these a little shorter. This, I think, is going to take about 20 minutes to go through, but it's a good memorandum. Anybody that wants to follow along, you can go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. And let's see, if you go to grand jury on the blue line, highlight grand jury, come down one line and click on action against the judiciary. And so once you're there, you can find the memorandums. They're down towards the bottom. The memorandum we're going to be looking at, again, is a memorandum on statutes, codes, and regulations. It looks like it's the third one down on the list of memorandums. Excuse me. Just a thing or two before we get started on that. And let's see. Yeah, just a couple of things before we get started. I think we're going to be able to finish off the paperwork for filing for the court in the next couple of days. I think by next Monday we might be complete with it. So we're very, very close, and I'm thinking maybe a day or two at the most I should be able to finish what I have to do, and then we'll look to bring it to perfection as best that we can. And this is a very, very important paper, a very unique paper, I think. We brought some things together from history, and I think people will find it interesting the way what we've done, how we put it together, and how we're going to file it into the court. And so I do want to read through it. I thought it was going to be over 50 pages, but it's under that. I'm not sure how many pages we're going to end up with, but it's still going to be lengthy. And I'll take a look to see if we want to read it in 2 weeks or, you know, half one part of the week, and half the other part of the week, another week. But I'm not sure yet what we'll do. We'll see how long it's going to be, and then we'll make a decision there. But I think it's something we do need to read in its entirety. It's an important paper, and we're going to be looking for people, as many volunteers as we can, to send it to as many individuals as we can. We'll make a list up. We do have some volunteers. We'll talk a little bit more about that after we read tonight's paper and get into Q&A and discuss other activities we've got going on. But we do need people to volunteer to send this to certain people. We want to hit all 94 federal district courts. And so we do want to file them, or you send a copy to all of those. We'd like to do it with a green card return slip that's probably going to cost about $15 to $20. I'll find out this week what exactly the cost is going to be once I know how many pages and and what kind of an envelope to put it into. And but it'll definitely be under $20 a piece. You know, if anybody buys a ream of paper, you figure you can, a ream of paper is 500 pages. I'm pretty sure. Let me think about it. Is it 250 or 500? I'm not sure. I think it's 500 pages on a ream. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure it is 500. So out of a ream, you should be able to get rent there. So out of the ream, you should be able to probably print out as many as, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, 10 copies could be printed out. So anybody who could volunteer to mail out 10 copies, it would cost you a ream of paper and somewhere around $15 to $20 per mailing. So that could be anywhere from, for five would be about $100, and for sending out 10 would be $200. We do need to mail them out definitely to all 94 federal district courts, and we also need to mail them out, of course, and I'll be mailing out the primaries. I'll be doing the filing, and we'll be mailing it out to the United States Supreme Court, and I'll be sending it to both houses, also a copy to the president and also a copy to A.G. Barr with the justice. And then there's a whole list of others. We'd like to get copies to many individuals. As a matter of fact, we probably won't worry about too much about certifying it. So, again, we might be able to do it cheaper than $15 to $20. But, again, I'll have to figure out exactly how many pages it's going to be. Then I can get a weight and go down to the post office and get a price and make some instructions. So, you know, I know last time if I can get it into a certain package, so many pages into a certain package, it was like $7 or $8 to mail out. And that actually comes with that $7, $8 mailing. You actually get a slip, so you have proof of the mailing. But I'm not worried too much about proof of mailing anyway to most of the mailings we'll be doing. Of course, I do worry about that going into the court, going to the federal, also to the United States Supreme Court, and also, of course, to the other individuals I mentioned. But going to the 94 federal district courts, we wouldn't necessarily need that certification. But again, it might come with it anyway. The other thing is there's a bunch of other people we'd like to send a copy to. And, for instance, every governor, there's 50 governors. It would be ideal if we can get, 50 people, one person from each state, or a couple people working together to say that they take care of their state, and get a copy to the governor and a copy to both houses. And then we'll think about some others that we might want to send copies to if we get enough people to volunteer, but we'll see where we go with that. Okay, so tonight we're going to take a look at the paper. It's a memorandum, as I mentioned. And it's on statutes, codes, and regulations. an important subject matter. People need to really clearly understand what a statute, code, and regulation is, and U.S. codes, which is 57 of them, USC titles. So we do need to understand, in order to understand, to be able to have liberty, we really need to understand the law and the difference between statutes, codes, and regulations. All right. Memorandum of Law, Statutes, Codes, and Regulations. The purpose of this memorandum is to liberate the American spirit from the tyranny of the judiciary by reminding the people of their sovereignty and liberation from all legislative law through the covenant we made with God via the Declaration of Independence, and therein holding the people accountable to that law which is ordained of God alone. Under our system of government, upon the individual and intelligence of the sovereign citizen, the state does not claim to control them, except as his or her conduct to others, leaving him or her the sole judge as to all that affects them. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign, not the government, makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, that would be the jurists, are the mirror of which the king's image, that's the word of God, is reflected. For laws are made for us. We are not made for the laws. Every man is independent of all legislative laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institutions formed by his fellow men without his consent. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, the rules, regulations, policies, and statutes are not the law. All codes, rules, and regulations are for government authorities only, not human creators, in accordance with God's laws. All codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and lacking due process. Statutes are an act of legislative declaring, commanding, or forbidding something, a particular law enacted and established by the will of the legislators, the Department of Government. The written will of the legislature, solemnly expressed according to the forms necessary to constitute it the law of the state. This word is used to designate the written law in contradistinction to the written unwritten law. Regulations. The act of a regulating a rule or an order prescribed for management or government, a regulating principle, a precept, a rule of order prescribed by a superior or competent authority relating to the actions of those under its control. A code is a complete system of positive law, significantly arranged and promulgated by legislative authority, a systematic body of law. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. Congress shall have the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into the execution the foregoing powers listed in Clauses 1 through 17, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States, or in any department or officer thereof. The following is a complete list of constitutional statutes, codes, and regulation-making authority, among which you will not find that we gave Congress authority to codify any law expanding or decreasing natural law, nor can we, leaving the people to answer for their behavior to God alone. The authority we gave them, power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and exercise to pay the debt, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, to borrow money, to regulate commerce, to establish naturalization and uniform bankruptcy laws, to coin money, regulate the value, provide counterfeiting and the security laws, establishing post offices and post roads, promote the science and useful arts, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water, raise and support armies, provide and maintain a navy, make rules for government and regulations of the land and naval forces, provide for the calling forth of the militia, provide for the governing of the militia, exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over Washington, D.C., the seat of government of the United States. Therefore, the United States Code, Titles 1 through 57, which make up all U.S. legislative laws, are for the jurisdictions stated within the said codes, and are not part of God's natural law, and the states likewise. The last words of God in the last four verses of the Bible, Revelation 22, 18 through 21, God cursed anyone who would add or remove any of his natural laws, or even think to change his laws, as we read in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, the beast shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws. The laws of nature and of nature's God. The judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity. That's the U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 2. The laws of nature and of nature's God are called natural law or common law, so called because the law is common unto all men, and no one can escape its judgment, which will be applied either in true courts of justice or on the last day. According to Black's Law, 4th edition, the key phrase in law means in the intendant or contemplation of the law, existing in law or by force of law. It is in fact actual, real, as distinguished from implied or inferred. Philosophically, it seems more correct to say that the word land means in law, as in the vernacular, the soil. The term land may be used interchangeably with property. It may include anything that may be classed as real estate or real property. The phrase law of the land, lifted from the Magna Carta, means due process and owing to all concerned, something called the path of the law. Therein, the constitutional phrase law of the land, property, for it is God who created all things for his pleasure and said, the world is mine, all men are mine, all souls are mine, and all gold and silver is mine. We the people and all the creation are God's property. God is the lawgiver and judge who gave us the law of liberty via unalienable rights, thereby making us free. We the people, through the jury, or grand and petit, sit as the tribunals on the king's bench, that is to say God's bench, to exercise the law of the land, and no man, by way of legislation or decree, can take we the people's liberty without consequence. Black's Law states that the phrase at law or in law is used to point out that a thing is to be done according to the course of the common law. At law, Black's Fourth, according to the law, by, for, or in law, particularly in distinction from that which is done in or according to equity, or in titles such as sergeant and at law, barrister at law, attorney or counselor at law. It is distinguished from a proceeding in equity. Law is that which is laid down, ordained, or established. Thomas Jefferson was a student of Lord Bolingbroke. He first began studying Bolingbroke's writing at the age of 14, and he read them again at the age of 23 as he was preparing for a career as a lawyer. Jefferson's literary commonplace book contains more quotations from Bolingbroke than from any other author, and all historians have given Bolingbroke the credit for Jefferson's famous phrase regarding the laws of nature and of nature's God. In a renowned letter to Alexander Pope, Lord Bolingbroke wrote the following words, which were to become the basis for Jefferson's opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. He said, "You will find that it is the modest, not the presumptuous inquirer, who makes a real and safe progress in the discovery of divine truths. One follows nature and nature's God. That is, he follows God in his works and in his word." Here we find a definition from the very individual that all scholars recognize as the source of Jefferson's phrase. According to Lord Brook, the law of nature's God is the law which is found in God's word. This was the definition which was intended by Jefferson, and this was the manner in which his words were understood by our forefathers. The law of nature's God, upon which our nation was founded, is nothing less than the Bible itself. The laws of nature are the most perfect and immutable, but the condition of human law is an unending succession, and there is nothing in it which can continue perpetually. Human laws are born, live, and die. Coke. As one might expect, the Bible is fairly clear on the subject of the supremacy of God and his law. It indicates that there is no God except the Lord God. God is the God of creation, and he is the creator of all things, visible and invisible. God impressed his laws upon creation, and he governs its operation accordingly. God gave his law so that the people would seek after God and know that God required of what God required of every person. Of course, the laws of God are right, perfect, and eternal. They apply over the entire globe and are written in God's creation, because God is the creator of all the earth. These rules also apply to all people and are written within each man, woman, and child, because God is the creator of all people. God also reiterated the basic elements of his rule of right and wrong in the Bible. The implication of this situation are straightforward. Since God created all things, he also has a right to rule them according to his laws. He rules the nations according to his laws. His laws rule the nations irrespective of whether a given nation believes in God or recognizes his laws. This does not mean that the nations are perfect, nor does it mean that people who do not worship God cannot rule, nor does it mean that God will judge lawbreakers according to all timetables of justice. It does mean, however, that God will not let a corrupt government rule forever. God judges justly on the earth and punishes lawless leaders and nations. Nations which forget God may be completely perish. Nations which honor God and try to follow his laws, however, can expect to receive his care and protection. Legislative law is vested law. Neither the U.S. Congress nor any state Congress has the authority to write statutes that control the people's behavior. It's up to the people to control their own behavior. And if they injure someone, the common law has remedies. Vested authority in our legislators is found in Article 1, Section 8. Congress absolutely has no authority to legislate outside of Article 1, Section 8. Liberty is freedom from all laws except those prescribed by nature's God. The real law, the common law, is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, the rules, regulations, policies, and statutes are not the law. Legislative statutes enforced upon the people in the name of the law are a fraud. They have no authority and are without mercy. Justice without mercy is godless and therefore repugnant to the United States Constitution. Lawmakers were given authority by the people to legislate the codes, the rules, regulations, the statutes, which are regulations and laws to control the behavior of bureaucrats, that is, the elected and the appointed officials, municipalities, and agencies. However, they were never given the authority to control the behavior of the people, as we read in the U.S. Supreme Court decision that all laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Legislators simply do not have the authority to rule men. We read, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. God breaks down the law as follows. And Jesus answered him, the first of all commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. And thou shalt love thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. Although it is a sin punishable only by the judge of the universe to break the commandments to love in your mind, words, and deeds, it does not become a crime punishable by man until your words and deeds are expressed in actions injuring another. Thomas Jefferson said, "I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences intending to too much liberty than those attending to too small a degree of it." If one of the people exercises his free will to carry a weapon, travel, practice law, park without depositing money in a meter, use hemp, pharmaceuticals, alcohols, vitamins, minerals, or other substances for medicinal or recreational purposes, the legislators do not have the authority to impose a fine, license, or make a right a crime. Roman law equals Code of Justinian, which is equity. Roman law and its influence in American law has been defined as the art of social control. Roman law is the legal system of ancient Rome and a legal development spanning over 1,000 years of jurisprudence from the Law of 12 Tables in 449 B.C. to the Corpus Juris Civilis, the body of civil law, ordered by Eastern Roman Emperor Justinian I. It is also sometimes referred to as the Code of Justinian. Although his name belongs more properly to the part titled Codex Justinianus, the historical importance of Roman law is reflected by the continued use of Latin legal terminology and legal system influenced by it. After the dissolution of the Western Roman Empire, the Justinian Code remained in effect in the Eastern Empire, known in the modern era as the Byzantine Empire. From the 7th century onward, the legal language in the East was Greek. A court of equity is a system of jurisprudence administered in the court of equity, also known as courts of chancery, which have jurisdiction in equity, which administer justice and decides controversies in accordance with the rules, principles, and precedents of equity, also known as codes, which follow the form and procedure of chancery, as distinguished from the courts having the jurisdiction, rules, and principles and practices of common law. A court of equity means a court of statutes. Search our founding documents, and you will discover that we, the people, have no desire to live under the control of human law. We chose to live under natural law. The general rule. Statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common right and common reason are null and void. The state cannot diminish rights of the people. The claim and exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. If the state converts a liberty into a privilege, the citizen can engage in the right with impunity. The assertion of a federal right, when plainly and reasonably made, is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. And a state may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right guaranteed by a federal constitution. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since its unconstitutionality dated from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that imposes no duties, it confers no right, it creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law. No courts are bound to enforce it. In conclusion, sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the laws is the definition and limitation of power. For the very idea that man may be compelled to hold his life or the means of living or any material right essential to the enjoyment of life at the mere will of another seems to be intolerable in any country where freedom prevails as being the essence of slavery itself. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law, jurisdictions and procedures defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which proceeds only according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Dated, Grand Jury Foreman, sealed. Okay, I just want to make a couple of points here about the paper we just read. The United States codes, there are 57 of them. We talk about them often enough, and, you know, so there are 57 USC titles. And each one of them have their own jurisdiction. And the Constitution gave authority to our government, particularly the judiciary, through the Constitution, for two jurisdictions, law and equity. Now, of course, under equity, there are different jurisdictions. In other words, each title applies to a different group of people. So this is the way government is controlled, by codes and statutes. And it's really a process in order to maintain control. For instance, some of these laws or titles, U.S. Title 20, for instance, deals with education. And it controls all of the regulations, the codes, and whatever statutes are that apply to that people must follow. It maintains order. It's the policies and procedures of an agency or a group of people or an elected body. There's law in here to control our legislators. There's law in here to control the judiciary. There's law in here, titles, to control the president. We have a list that we did post a while back. I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but we also, of course, have a copy of all the titles that I know we posted up on our website also. But we did make a list, and maybe with those titles in the beginning of those lists, it lays out the difference in each one of these titles. And what we're interested in really paying a lot of attention to are three titles particularly. Titles USC Title 28, which is the rules of the court, and the rules of the court apply only to all of the jurisdictions within the titles between 1 through 57. And so it is the rules of procedure, the rules of evidence. It's the rules of the court, and they need to be followed inside those courts. The other title we need to be concerned with and have an understanding in is Title 18. USC Title 18 is the law of the sea. And as we read tonight, the law of the sea, we've given the Congress the ability to write an law and punishment for felonies exercised at sea. And so that's an authority we gave to the legislators to write laws for that. But certainly it is not the law of the land. And if we look into Title USC 18, you go inside the title itself to find the jurisdiction that it applies to. And you will find the jurisdiction is the law of the sea. It's the sea. It's maritime law. This is extremely important because it's in USC 18 where we find the penal code. The penal code applies to the law of the sea, not the land. We've never given legislators power or authority to write laws to control our behaviors. I believe it was in the early 1970s is when federal U.S. Attorneys, not federal, but U.S. attorneys, United States attorneys, were given a procedure and a process to call for the grand jury. They didn't have that before that. Now, our nation continued up until 1970, 71, 72, somewhere in the beginning of 1970s when this power and authority was written through legislation. where they had the power to call for a grand jury. And the question is why? Because we are a common law nation, and we apply the common law to all people, even in federal cases, if it's a criminal case, it doesn't matter. Even if it's at sea, they have certain unalienable rights that cannot be violated. And so they, too, have to have due process. Even in the process written, for instance, in a process called INREM, I-N-R-E-M, which is really it's against the thing where, control over, for instance, a ship at sea run by pirates. If it's captured, they seize the ship, they bring it back to the port, and they file the necessary paperwork for it. One's a proof of claim, the other is fiduciary authority over the item. And this allows us to bypass the due process, which due process is serving the individual concerning the property. But at sea, and for this purpose, particularly for piracy and other activities at sea, we seize the item. Now, we still give the people the opportunity, and I don't know how long of a time before the actual item becomes owned by the country that seized that ship, for instance. Maybe it's 30 days, maybe it's 60, maybe it's 90, maybe it's more. I don't know. I haven't looked that up. But whatever that time period is, that gives the opportunity still for the pirates to come and claim their ship and say, hey, that's mine, and you can't have it, and you have to give me due process. Of course, they wouldn't do that because then they'd be captured. And, of course, that's a problem for them. But the point is even at sea, we the people in this nation, if we judge anyone, whatever took place at sea, they still have the common law. They still have unalienable rights. Now, there are statutes which now will be acknowledged and realized by a jury. And these are the rules of the game, so to speak. You know, I mean, again, we give certain authority and powers to write certain legislation for the sole purpose of controlling an activity, maybe a commercial activity and so on. Well, when people participate in those activities, then they're signing up for that, and they've agreed to it. But a jury still has the power and the authority to nullify even those laws. If they decide for one reason or another that these particular requirements of a penalty or whatever the statute might say, that it just doesn't work with this case, we think it's unjust, and so we nullify it. So the people still have the power to nullify laws. But generally speaking, a jury would go along, I would presume, with the statutes and exercise them as far as they feel and believe that it is just. And again, it's up to the people. But this is extremely important to understand. The penal code, which is being applied upon the people in what's called criminal courts, and any time you see a criminal court, that right there tells you it's a problem. It's statutory, and it has nothing to do with we the people. But people are being prosecuted in those courts, and they go to jail from the end results of those courts. The grand jury is statutory grand jury. It's not a common law grand jury. It's not a free grand jury. It's not an honorable grand jury. It's not a just grand jury. It's not a lawful grand jury. But they do call it and give the appearance because they're using it on land. The trial jury is the same. It's statutory jury. They're stacked with an end result. That's the whole focus and point, and it's total control that has been taking place in our federal courts. And that is why we don't see, the authority for United States attorneys to be able to call forth a grand jury until they finally gave them the power and authority in the 1970s. So all of their laws that they apply upon the people, you know, again, this is extremely important to understand. If you are in a court that's operating under statutes, then it's what's called an equity court, where you have a judge who is one jurist, a political animal, someone who is either elected or appointed to that position, and therefore makes him a servant, who then gets to judge one of the people who is the master. And, of course, that doesn't make any sense at all. We have chosen to be judged in courts of law. And that's why the Constitution says law and equity. Courts of law is under God. Now, there's one other title we need to pay a little bit of attention to that they apply towards the people, and that's USC Title 26. And I have no idea from reading this what they're even talking about half the time. I can't even fathom any idea of any authority over anything, even commercial activities taking place. I can't even fathom that. But I've been through all, you know, I can't say quite a bit because there's thousands of pages. You know, with the ability with a computer, being able to do word searches and phrase searches, you know, you can exhaust a study in a certain subject matter, whatever it may be. And very importantly, looking up the meaning of words, because they change the meanings of words. For instance, they say that in this portion is the meanings of these words are found, and they'll refer someplace else. So you go to this other place to see the meanings of the words, and maybe United States, for instance, means Guam, the Philippines, and a few other places, but it has nothing to do with the 50 states. It talks about territories. And again, that's a fraud, the game played. It's a word game. Same thing they'll use, for instance, a person is a corporation. So they play all these games, and there's a purpose for that, of course, and that takes us back to 1871 with the Organic Act, and they were building a statutory prison for the people, and we're in it right now. All the people that go to court, let's take the local courts, traffic courts, where they have no power, no authority to do anything there. And yet they do. Why? The judge actually believes that he's got the power and the authority to do what he does. After all, he was elected. And he's sitting there with the gavel, and he's got a little cloak on, and he sends people to jail and takes money from them. He believes he's got that power. And the only way he gets away with this is because all the people sitting in that courtroom believe the same thing. They believe he has the power. Where liberty is liberty from government control. It's liberty from legislation, legislative laws. It's liberty from being controlled by another human being or a group of human beings. That's what liberty is. And that's what our founding fathers, they spoke about this, and they made it clear, you know, that it is free from legislative authorities. We chose to be in courts of law. And in common law, there is a maxim. For every injury, there must be a remedy. And another maxim is, without an injured party, there can be no crime. So someone must be injured, and that's the key point to this whole thing. And if you injure another individual, one way or another, or a group of individuals, okay, then you can be, you are held liable in a court of law. And so justice will be served in those courts when true laws are broken. Statutes are applied upon the people. People accept them because of ignorance. They're not taught these things in school. They don't know. And it's time now to really get this out. And as we move forward in the things that we're doing, we do intend on getting into the schools and getting good good textbooks on law, civics, and so on. Okay, so Title 26 is another problem. One of the very interesting things is it's Title 26 is not positive law. Of all the titles, it's about half of them. Almost exactly to the half, the 50% mark, half of the U.S. titles are positive law. The other half are not, okay, which means most of them are regulations and different things of that nature. You know, and the administrative courts that deal with those problems is really usually with an individual working for an agency or an employee of some agency of some kind. And they have to follow the regulations. If they break the regulations, maybe they could be suspended for a period of time. Maybe they, reduce some salaries or something. I don't know. Whatever it is that they wrote up in these things to, you know, punish or deal with the people and really put something out there to prevent them from doing things that they shouldn't be doing. So it's written, accordingly. But USC 26 in itself, it is not law. It says that it's not law, as a matter of fact. And yet at the other side of things, and also it's not positive law. It has not been deemed by the legislator and signed by the president as law, positive law, which can then be applied in a court. And certain penalties can be applied to individuals in those cases, you know, as whatever it is written. And so those courts in USC 26, of course, we know that's the tax court. And at the same time, inside USC 26, it says that that USC 26 is a court of record. Now, that's an oxymoron. That totally stands against itself, because a court of record operates under the process of common law, natural law. There are no statutes. And so how can you have a court operating with statutes and applying those statutes and yet calling itself a court of record? So it's a contradiction in terms. It's a contradiction of itself. It's an oxymoron. And so those three particular titles, people need to really look into them and understand so that you could defend themselves against any assault by the government under USC 1826, or the use, which they've been using as long as I've been practicing law myself, they have been using against myself and many, many people, everyone I know, especially pro se people particularly, which Rule 12, and Rule 12 throws us out of the court constantly. Now, we're not going to get into a discussion tonight about Rule 12, but we have spoken about it in the past. But it is something that they constantly use to throw us out of the court. It's very frustrating. But it cannot be applied, and it can be challenged. The other thing is that we don't need, when you open up a court of record, a court of law, and even if they don't acknowledge it, it's nevertheless still is a court of law. And we don't have to go through the process of appealing anything. We can go on the assault. We can assault that court by opening up another court. We can assault that court with another court. In other words, go after to get justice from another perspective, but not going through appealing it. Appealing it is asking permission to, you know, make a change of the end results, the decision of the court, which therefore then you are agreeing with the court. You're acquiescing and you're agreeing with the terms and whatever takes place with that appeal. So appealing is not really a good thing for people to do if they intend on opening a court of record. And of course, you know, if we have, for instance, if we had contracts with people and they broke the contract and you go into court, well, now that can go into an equity court, because the contract is sort of the statutes, the rules, the regulations of the agreement. And so you have a court that you're opening for the sole purpose of suing someone, and it is automatically an equity court unless you decide if the value of the case is more than $20, that's what the Constitution says. And, of course, that was an ounce of gold way back when. Not nowhere near. I think an ounce of silver is about 20 bucks an ounce at this point. And 20 silver coins brings us to the value of an ounce of gold, approximately. It's 19-point-something silver dollars. And but in any event, you know, the courts are operating under statutes, but in a case where you have a contract, you can go either way. If we have honest men in the courts, if we feel confident in the court, at this point I don't feel confident, I'd never open up any court of equity. Hopefully get onto the other side and we pull these people under control, then we can open a court of equity. A court of equity has a lot of good things, because first of all, cases go quickly in a court of equity. You're trusting in one person to make a decision, and you're trusting that they're going to honestly respond to your case according to the facts of the case and the contract. And so, you know, a court of equity could be a good thing to do to go through quickly. But if you don't feel you can get justice in that, then you definitely want to go with a common law court. So it's up to the people to decide, and any of the individuals, any side can challenge the court of equity and say and require a court of law, and that of course is the law, and so we need to understand those things. These are key things to understand to keep ourselves out of jail, to keep ourselves out of problems, and to understand how this whole system works. So we get down into the state level, the same thing is there. They have the power and the authority to write all the statutes that we've given them authority through the Constitution. It's unfortunate that I think a lot of constitutions don't get into enough detail of what law-writing powers they've given to legislators, and they're all over the place, maybe. But nevertheless, no matter where they are, being all over the place, has nothing to do with we the people. It all has to do with bureaucrats, elected and appointed individuals, people who are working for the government. That's what all of these laws, man-made laws, are about. It's called positive law. Strange name to give man's law, but in any event, I guess it does have a positive thing towards maintaining control. So from that perspective, it could be, I could appreciate it. But nevertheless, they don't have the power or the authority to write any kind of a statute, any kind of a code, or any kind of regulations for the people. They just don't have that power. And why do they get away with it? Because the judge believes he's got the power, and the people do too. And as long as that continues, then this problem in these courts will go on and on and on. And as most everybody knows at this point, we are joining cases to our papers that we are going to be filing hopefully in the next week or two. So again, as I mentioned a little earlier, I'm pretty confident that we will have the paper that we're ready to file into the federal court, which is the case that we've been working towards for years at this point. We have filed some almost 200, I think it was 191, somewhere around, like, I think that number seems to jump in my mind at this moment. We have filed 191 papers into the court. We have filed show causes. We have filed informations, memorandums. We have filed writs of mandamus. We filed quite a few papers, and they haven't answered one. They haven't responded to one paper, one thing we've done. This is the case. We've been building the case. We started really certain papers onto the federal government, and I was looking back for writing this. It goes back to 2015. So we were filing papers in the court, on our government officials, not through the courts, starting in 2015 and right into 2016. Up until December of 2016 is when we actually opened up a statutory case. We opened up, not a statutory case, but we have a statutory case number. We opened up a court of record up in the federal Northern District here in New York, the federal court. And they charged us $400 for their quote-unquote justice. Of course, we argued the point, but they didn't want to hear anything. So we paid the $400 to get the paperwork in. We did alter the paper accordingly to make sure that it doesn't have a statutory process in it, and it is a common law court. So we're very specific on the papers, and they didn't catch that. So that was filed in there with it, even though they robbed us of $400, which we intend to get our money back. But nevertheless, the sole purpose of the filing of this case was really to build a case. We've been in court for 2 years. We've been in court. Well, actually, it's further than that. We go back to 2015 when we started filing papers directly to, or serving papers, shall I say. But the filing of the court case in itself, December of 2016, is actually when a case was opened, and that case has been going on and being heard, and they have acquiesced, and that's one of the major points. They have just remained silent, and silence, when you have a duty to speak, is fraud. So they're frauds, and now we've come to that point in time to file that final paper. That really is going to be the clincher of everything we've been doing here at National Liberty Alliance. So again, I think in a week or two we'll be filing it. I'm hoping to read it. And if we're going to be filing it, let's say we're going to file it next week. Well, we'll read it on Monday then. But if we're not sure that we're not going to file it Monday, you know, that next week, then we may hold off till the next week, because we don't want to be too premature in revealing what's in those papers, because I think it's a pretty interesting paper that we put together. And again, we have history to back up everything we've got in that paper. And what it is we're doing and how we're doing it, how we're approaching it, certain papers and forms that we created for it, all of it is very rock solid, valid in it, going back into the history of a nation, the history of common law. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to respond to it. But another important thing about this paper filing is the timing has to be right. We're at in the right timing. We're here. This is it. Maybe not necessarily today or tomorrow, but maybe next week or the week after. I mean, we're right here in the beginning of things. It's all about what's going on with what Trump is doing, with what's being revealed and the cases going into court. And, you know, we know that a lot of the things that is going to be revealed that's going to horrify this nation of what's really been going on by the people that they trusted, that we the people trusted, when all that is exposed, and that must be exposed this year. It cannot go into next year. And I know, I think, people that have been, getting out the news have made these points, and I think Q has made the point also. It's got to happen now. So this is the time for whatever's going to happen to really hit real hard. And if anybody watching and paying attention, and I suggest everyone, they should be listening to X22 Report, because from my opinion, it is the best source of news. Where they got their fingers on the pulse right there with what exactly is going on. Very informative. The guy comes on for almost an hour every day with something, and he also has two or three or more interviews, very, very valid and important, interesting, timely interviews with certain individuals, which lays out a lot of the things that are going on, are happening, or are about to happen. X22 Report, and you can find, that's on YouTube. And if you want to find a connection on that, let's see, you go up to National Liberty Alliance. Let's see, I think it's under, what is it, Reality Check? It may be. Let me click on that Reality Check. It may be underneath there. No, that's not it. News. I guess, let me just click on News and see if that's it. And then here it goes. And page is taking a while to open up. Okay, it's not really on that page, but it's in there. I'll look for it, and if someone asks later on, hopefully I'll have the answer where exactly it's at. Oh, matter of fact, is it under Q? I think it's under Q. Let me see. Anybody haven't seen the videos under Q, you should definitely go see them. They're really powerful videos. And then as you come down, as you come down under these videos, just to read off a couple of them, we have the plan to save the world. Then there's the long road to the White House, Donald Trump from 1980 to 2017. And another video that is Trump at War, The Fall of the Republic, Alliance Infiltrates Deep State, and Secret Societies and JFK. Then underneath that, we have these news medias coming out of YouTube, X22. So you can click on here and get out there and subscribe to them. Also, I found really second right behind this guy is a news program called Black Conservative Patriot. This guy is really good and really, kind of fine-tunes a lot of things that we may miss and brings them together for us. And so he's very good. So I would say that's second to X22. But I listen every day at least to X22 and pretty much Black Conservative Patriot also. Sometimes I listen to other things, but those two are definite. So if your time is restricted and you really want to get the big picture, those are the ones to go to. But we also have on the right-hand side of our website, on every page, you'll see breaking news. There's a little box, and it gives a lot of two-minute hits, you know, just on what's breaking that day, you know, the big stories, the important big stories. And it's just a two-minute clip here and a two-minute clip there, bringing you up to date on what's going on. People need to really be paying attention at this point in time. But anyway, the timing is here. I think the paper's almost ready to file. We may retard it a few more days or a week or whatever, but we're really rushing to get it done so that we're ready and poised to be able to file it. And I do think we'll probably be able to file maybe next week or the week after. But the papers need to be, I think we're going to have them done by next week. That I'm pretty confident in saying at this point. Okay, Jan, are you out there?
I'm here.
Questions? How you do? Welcome back, by the way.
I have, I would like to comment a little bit on your announcement on the people that have volunteered the mail. I've got about 19 people so far that have volunteered. And okay. I don't know how many copies that's going to be, because initially we were talking about up to 500 pages, so people volunteered to send out one, and they specifically said that. So when we get a final number on how many pages and cost.
Yeah, it's going to be, I believe it's going to be under 50. And everything that is going to be referred to inside the papers as far as evidence, as far as papers already filed in the court, habeas corpuses, we've done non-judicial foreclosures, we've done... and indictments that we've done. There's a reference to, in the paperwork to that, and people, and it's already in the court. It's in the statutory court that we had opened up for the purpose of really depositing. It's a depository for all of our work, so they're under the auspices of the court. But there's another opening coming up, so it'll be in two numbers, two case numbers. So we'll file a complete set into the other one also. So both case numbers will have everything, and we also have all the papers that we'll be filing. Matter of fact, people can go up right now and see those papers. If you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, come to the blue bar on the right side, highlight grand jury, click on action against the judiciary. And we have a lot of papers that we filed, and these are the same papers that are going to be listed in the case. So there's the redress of grievances papers, then there's writs and information papers, then there's habeas corpuses, non-judicial foreclosures, and there's a list of evidences, and then memorandums. So all of those papers are papers that we filed in the court. We've been at trial for 2 years now, and it's time to bring this to a conclusion. And so all of these papers are referred to, and people can go, and they can either come to our website and download them right there, or they can go out to the, into the, oh goodness, what's that called for getting out there into the federal, get the cases? What do they call that?
PACER.
PACER, yes. They can go out to PACER, and they can download them there off of PACER. They'll pay a pretty penny, though, I'm sure, because there's a lot of documents, so if you want them for free, you come to our website and download them there. These papers are an education, okay? Reading the papers that we have written over the past couple of years, 3-4 years now since 2015, and the paper we're going to be about ready to file and serve soon, it's an education. It's a real education. We're touching everything in these papers about who we are as a people, about America, about common law, about the Constitution, and the difference between equity and law and details of how we became a nation. I mean, it's all in there. And also how they robbed us of our liberty, how they've robbed us of so much over the past 200 years. So anyway, all those papers can be downloaded there. So we're only going to serve to everyone the 50 pages. Now, I might file a complete set. I might serve a complete set to the United States Supreme Court. Also, I know we're going to serve a complete set to the president and a complete set to the AG Barr, the Attorney General. So those three, I think, we're going to get full sets. Plus, we're going to file another full set in the new case number that we've got. And we do already have a case number for that, which we'll talk about at another time. But everything else that we serve, everyone else, whether it's the federal district, the people in the federal district or the state level, it's all going to be just the less than 50 pages. And again, they can go and download all the evidence and all of the other papers used in order to bring to the climax this paper that we're filing. So hopefully that will help us to find more people to get more filings. And the 19 people, goodness, if they were willing to do 500 pages, maybe now they can do 10 copies of 40 or 50 pages, roughly speaking. And I think the mailing, we might be able to get as low as under $10 each. So 10 filings would be $100. So the investment that you're making, that people would be making in order to press us closer to liberty would be $100. Hopefully the people think that $100, that it's worth it. Liberty is worth $100. Of course, it's worth a lot more than that. So let's not worry about $100. Let's do what we got to do. You know, ream of paper, goodness, I forget what it was, $30 for a ream. I'm not sure. You could get the... go down to Staples and probably get it even cheaper than that. I don't know. All right. So let's. We're going to have a meeting, Jan, as soon as possible. Tomorrow morning, first thing, let's get on the phone, you and me. And we got a lot of things to try to put together, organize, and talk about. And I think I'm just about ready to hand over to you the major part of the papers that we've written. I'm working on the last section of it. But I think we can start working towards that and get some comments on that, make sure we can get rid of redundancies and maybe reordering things a little differently. You know, we'll pull a committee together to take a look at this and see, make sure we haven't missed anything. And we'll see where we go with that. All right, what else you got, Jan?
Okay, as soon as we get that final number, I'll go through that list of 19 and make sure how many mailings that'll generate, so we'll be able to tell how many more people we need to volunteer, and we can get some more information out on that.
All right, and anybody else that wants to volunteer, this is the most important thing. This is what we've been working for when did we start this? 2013, I think, was we started the National Liberty Alliance focusing in on the courts. So we've been focusing in on this some 6-7 years now. We've been working forward to accomplish certain goals, and we've accomplished, you know, a goal, then we move to the next, and the next, and the next. And one of the big goals was to be able to have a presence in every state. We accomplished that quite a few years ago. And, you know, we'd love to be able to say we've got a presence in every county. But have we ever did a percentage on how many counties we have a presence in, Jan?
Not that I've seen.
Let's see if we can't get someone to take a look at that. And, you know, maybe because everything, the way it's recorded, maybe that's something quick can be found, with some numbers that maybe Carl can find for us and see where we are, percentage of counties.
Okay.
That might be a very simple mathematical, thing to put into the system to spit it out, whatever we need. But... in any event, we've also had to file lots of papers, and we have 191 papers we have filed, okay? So we have to file papers. We had to serve all of the government agencies that are very important to us, of course, you know, on the legislative and administrative levels and judicial. And so we've achieved every goal we had to achieve. And we just recently have gotten to the point where we're almost done with the paperwork, and the timing is right. This is the time to file. And again, we may retard it a week or so because we may want more of the event to be explosive or going on out there while we're filing our papers. But, okay, what else we got, Jeff?
Okay, we have two short questions for you tonight, John.
All right.
The first one says, from what version of the Holy Bible does John read at the beginning of the call?
King James.
King James. Okay, great. Second question. I have two pending traffic cases, and the court dates are soon. If I join these cases with National Liberty Alliance, what shall I do with the pending court dates?
Go to them. You know, look at when we serve a paper. If you join with us, what we do is we do an amicus curiae from the grand jury on behalf of the individual who petitioned us to enter into their case to assist them. And for an amicus curiae to have validity, it has to be on a subject matter that affects a broad range. And clearly, every case and everything we're doing affects a broad range, and it's so broad, it's conspiracy at every level, from the federal down into the towns. It's conspiracy against the people to defraud them, to imprison them, to fine them, to frustrate them, because the whole thing is set up for all of those purposes and more. And it's RICO on steroids. Money flow is unbelievable, the amount of money that these people are raking in and sticking in their pockets, believe me. This is RICO. So, one of the first things we do is the person wants us to join their case, we work to get that petition for joinder. And then we file an amicus curiae on behalf of the case to shut them down, for they do not have jurisdiction and also are not given due process. So those are the two constitutional issues we use to shut them down. And when you go to court, and the paper, you got to wait the 30 days before we can default them. And they will default. They always default. Be nice if they turned around and said, okay, yeah, we're wrong, and return the person back to their original state, which is what we order them to do through this amicus curiae. And we tell them that we expect for them to cease and desist and to return the person, the individual, back to their former, their original state when they were brought in. It means if they spent $1,000 on an attorney, they need their $1,000. We're not looking for the injury monies, but we're looking for restoring the person. If their house was being taken, they got to release the house or give the house back, or at least give back the true value of that house. So that's what the amicus curiae is pushing for. Once they default, then it's moved on into our case for cause. And then there's going to be a real powerful thing that's going to take place at that point, which we will discuss after we file. But that takes 30 days, okay, for them to go through that process to come, because you've got to give them 30 days to respond, okay? So they have 30 days, and then it takes, you want to go an extra few days, and then we default them. And once it defaults, then we file another paper and a motion moving it to the court. It takes a few days. So you're looking 45 days before it actually is situated in the court. And the more cases we can get to join with what we're doing is more proof of the assault they have upon the people in these courts that have jurisdictions unknown. They're fraudulent courts. All right. So hopefully I answered the question. The question was on two traffic violations.
Yeah.
What was it?
Yeah.
Oh, do they have to go? Yes. Look, you have to go. You must go. And you tell the judge very simply this: didn't you get the amicus curiae from the grand jury? Jurisdiction has been challenged. And the judge may turn and say, well, okay, yeah, I made a decision on that, that we have jurisdiction. And that's at the point then you tell the judge, and you've been very polite with this, by the way. You don't want to get yourself in trouble. Well, you have to recuse yourself, judge. Well, why do I have to recuse myself? Because when jurisdiction is challenged, and we'll give you the proper sources that you can use. Matter of fact, we should make a list of these points that you can bring up in the court with the source. But the bottom line is this: is once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. That means a hearing must take place and a decision must be made. Okay, and you, judge, you have to now recuse yourself, because you did not, the case has not been decided. And he may say, well, yeah, I just decided it. Well, you should have decided it for me, because you can only rule on what is before the court. And the only thing before this court is my papers. And the prosecutor or whoever the other side is, they haven't responded. So how can you find for the other side when the only papers you have is mine, and they've defaulted, they've acquiesced, they haven't responded? How can you make that decision? Now, you're just biting for time to get past the 30 days so you can actually file the default. And again, we'll write up a few things you could say and give you the proper sources. You can actually just read it in the court. And it'll only be A, B, or C. It's not going to be no big thing. But the key thing is that they'll roll it along anyway. They like to roll things along for numerous reasons. Also, the lawyers make more money and all that other stuff. The court does, too. But they'll roll it along. But at some point when we move it to federal court for cause, now they're going to have to respond directly to the federal court case that we have control over in the common law process. Okay? So they're not going to find that their Rule 12 moves are going to have any power or authority to do anything. Again, I don't want to get into too many details on how we're going to proceed there on that. But Rule 12 definitely will not stand. Now, of course, we're going to get resistance. We're going to get debating and argument. We're going to get all kinds of things. But we're just going to ignore them and go forward like they do. But we're standing on justice. They're standing on injustice. And at some point when they realize that the protection has been removed, because, you see, if they didn't have protection, they would not be doing these things. They feel pretty safe. They think they're immune. And we're going to make it clear to them, you're not immune. Once you stepped outside your authority, your jurisdiction, you've lost all immunity, okay? So you don't have it no more, number one. Number two, you know, we hope this is the point we want them to really come to an understanding. The other thing is there's no one out there to protect you anymore. Deep state is falling, you know, nowhere to hide. You see, that's the pressure to be used to help to work with this case. And, of course, we hoped that things would be in this kind of a position by the time we got to where we're at, which is right now. We had faith and believed that, you know, God would provide, and he did. Here we are. You know, we get a type of Osiris. We get Trump and what he's done in the last couple of years. We were on a court case, and yet everything we filed, everything we've done, and we're finishing off the papers for the final filing, which we would definitely had to have sit on for a while until either something like this comes up, which is breaking now, or until we hit critical mass. And I do believe and perceive there's a good possibility we're going to hit both at the same time. I think we're going to hit critical mass pretty quickly now and I'll give you my thoughts and ideas on that maybe in the next coming weeks. I don't want to comment on why I think that at this moment, but I do see something that I think is going to happen for us. Okay, what else we got?
Oh, that's all of it, John.
Okay. Any other announcements or anything?
Nope, not that I have.
Okay, again, anybody who can volunteer to do some mailing for us, even if it's just one paper, you know, we're going to make a list and we'll tell you who to mail it to and how to fill it, you know. Basically, you'll just go to a place online, we'll tell you where to go, and you print out the papers, let them print right out, and then we'll tell you who to mail it to, and then get a copy of the receipt of your mailing. Yeah, you can, you know, email that to us. But we'll work out the details on that, and whatever we give you, it'll be in writing specifically on who it's being addressed to. And the return address on the paperwork needs to be from the grand jury, and we'll give you that information also. We'll lay that all out. So figure every mailing you do for us will probably cost you, let's say, about $10. Roughly speaking. So if people can do 10 of them, that'd be great. If they can do one of them, that'd be great too. So we need volunteers to help to get this out. But once you volunteer to do it, and we tell you here it is, then you need to get it out within the next day or two at the most. Within, let's say, a 48-hour period, you need a window. You need to mail that out. And we need to get the receipts, the proof that it's been mailed out. And we'll go through those details with the individuals that are going to volunteer. So please, if you can volunteer for this, go get a hold of Jan and let him know that you're interested in helping. Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. You give him an email, and make sure you put your name, your email, and a phone number in there. Or you can call Jan. You can find his number under our directory up on the blue line. Just click on directory, and he's right up there in the top. He's our national leader. So get a hold of him, and we'll get you on the list, and we'll let you know when to do what we're doing. All right. I guess that's about it. We're going to go over to Brent now, and he's going to spend 15, 20 minutes, and then we'll open up for conversations. We'll open up for an open forum, questions, comments, and so on. Okay, Brent, you got the mic. I did mute you before. Did you? You'll have to unmute yourself. Oh, you are unmuted.
I should be.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I should be good.
You keep the mic. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you.
Oh, well, let me introduce Brent. Brent, usually this is the first time I think I forgot. Okay, Brent Winters, he's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. Great book. If you haven't read it, it's a good book to read. You know, read some of our stuff first, and that'll give you some background to be able to really get into his book, because he gets into a depth here and a lot of sources. I think half of his book is sources. But anyway, Brent Allen Winters, the author of Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent?
Thank you again, John. And I want to acknowledge tonight my friend from Montana who's been listening to National Liberty Alliance conference calls for a few years, and he tried to get me to listen. And then after John allowed me to say a few words on these Monday night calls, my friend would call me and say, Brent, where are you? You're not on the call tonight. He did this probably 100 times. I don't know. He'd get me on the call. I'd get busy. And I appreciate all the other folk. Just two examples, John and my friend from Montana. I don't want to mention his name because he hasn't told me I can mention his name. But this has been rewarding for me. Gives me an opportunity to uncork my pressure boiler and let off some steam. Well, I want to tell you a story. My comments, of course, are my own, and they may or may not comport with National Liberty Alliance or John or any of the other principals of that organization. They're kind enough to let me talk. I want to tell you a story about what happened on the 28th of March. On the 28th of March in the year 1969, I was in high school in 1969, and I was from I grew up on a farm, not far from Terre Haute, Indiana, but not at Terre Haute, but not far. I say that because people used to know where Terre Haute is because that's where Larry Bird played college ball. But it was in that part of the world, and small town, and I didn't live in town, but I went to high school in town. And the high school had a beautiful gymnasium. It was built in 1927. It was built with oil money. So there was a lot of oil production there, and they had a fantastic tax base, put up a beautiful gymnasium, and it was different than anybody around us in that part of the world, and a state-of-the-art football field, and the only quarter-mile track in the county at that time. None of the other schools had such a thing. And on the 28th of March, 1969, I was at school. We went to school, do a lot of things, always something happening in town. And that particular evening, they were having a concert, and the school band was down on the gymnasium floor, and we were up in the bleachers. And this gymnasium was built real nice, where the bleachers didn't come right down to the floor. It was about 4 or 5 feet before bricks and a brick wall there on the edge of the gym. And it went up, and it was a real wood floor. It didn't have any cement under it, just joist. Beautiful. Well, at any rate, that's another story. The band was down on the floor, and we were there, and didn't have enough to make a big band, so they invited the other two towns in the county to come, and their bands to come, and they had a little concert in the spring. They did this about every year. And they got down to the last song, just before the last finale song, which was going to be a march, and somebody came to the band leader just before the song started with a note and handed it to him. And he read the note, and he turned around to the crowd all sitting on one side of the gymnasium. And he said, ladies and gentlemen, he said, General Eisenhower just passed away. And everything got real silent. And then he turned around, and he had the band played the last song. And the last song was Stars and Stripes Forever. And Sarah Jane Johnson was the doctor's daughter. Two doctors in town. They were both brothers. And Sarah Jane was the daughter of one of them. One of them delivered me when I was born. And Sarah Jane played the piccolo. And Sarah Jane played the piccolo solo of the last refrain of Stars and Stripes Forever. And when she played the solo, and all the trombones stood up and played the counter melody, all of the crowd stood up. And I don't know, it wasn't anything anybody said, but I could just tell that people weren't sad that General Eisenhower died. They were sad, but they weren't overcome with grief. Like when President Kennedy was shot, people were overcome. It was an emotional mess. Well, that's not the way they felt about, at least where I live, they didn't. It was as though they were saying, thank God for President Eisenhower. And when the last refrain of the song was played, they all stood up. And I remembered that through the years, and it was a rather moving moment. But I realize now that the reason they weren't upset or scared or any of those things was because they weren't loyal, ultimately, to President General Eisenhower. They liked him, and he was very much part of our history, of course, born of a Mennonite family in the middle of Kansas, Abilene, Kansas, in 1890-something, or it was 1890. Well, it was back there in the 90s. And but they were loyal to, the feeling was that they were loyal to country and law, the law of the land and the land itself, the country, but they weren't attached to any particular personality. And as we've said in our country, since the beginning, we are a government of laws and not of men. A government of laws and not of men. We change men like we ought to. We ought to be changing men in government like you change underwear or diapers on a baby. They get soiled after a while, and you need to get rid of them. And if we're loyal to men, we're just a passel of fools if we're ultimately committed to men, because there's no man on the faces of God's green earth that's worthy of our commitment that way. Our law is worthy of our commitment. Our law of the land is worthy of our commitment. And our land is worthy of our commitment. And to be loyal to the law of the land is to protect the land and be loyal to the land. And that's what our Maker wants. He wants us to be loyal to him. How do you be loyal to him? Well, let's come back to it. We be loyal to his will. What is the will of the sovereign? It is law. That's our task as Americans, and that's what distinguishes us in our common law country from all other, well, there's only one other tradition of religion, law, and government in the world, and that's the law of the city, most commonly seen today in the Code of Justinian, the canon law of the Roman Church, the Code Napoleon, the Code of Bismarck. Those are all variations of the Code of Justinian, and they're a code of imperial power, and where the country subsumes its identity in its leader, as the Roman Church subsumes its identity in its Pope, as France subsumed its identity in Napoleon, as Germany under the Code of Bismarck had subsumed their identity to Bismarck and then subsumed their identity to Hitler. And in those kind of places, that's going all over the world today, and those kinds of places where men do that, where they subsume their identity in the state, in the government, when the government goes down, you go down with it. When General Eisenhower went down, we felt a surge of pride in our country back in those days. Back in those days, of course, there was a counter movement in the country trying to burn down all the college campuses and destroy the country. And we had the goofy idea back then that all of our problems could be solved in the in a barber's chair, or we had the goofy idea that we could defeat communism with guns. Well, you can, guns are a stopgap measure, but that doesn't defeat communism. Today we're facing the same ugly collective centralized city law kind of a government under other labels. It's the same as communism. It's no different fundamentally. And we will ultimately defeat it, as they said of us. They're going to defeat us without guns. We defeat it. The only remedy to their lawlessness is true law. The only remedy to the radicalism and the lawlessness of the state is true law. That's how you defeat it. And how is justice, true law is justice. How do you find justice and how do you achieve it? You only achieve justice on the individual level. Oh, we need to keep our powder dry and be ready to repel enemies and attack if needed. But even when you do that, all you're doing, if you win at battle by violence, is cut off the head of the Hydra. The Hydra has other heads, and they will keep rising. And so it is what burns in your soul that will protect, that will be used, I should say, to protect us and our liberties, our freedoms, our trial by jury, which is a creature of our common law. It doesn't exist in the rest of the world. Due process that's meaningful doesn't exist in the rest of the world, just in common law countries. And here it's under constant attack. That's why it's important that you hide the true law in your heart. You learn it, you put it down deep, and when you need it, it will bob forth in force. But if you don't put the true law down in mental sod, it won't be there when the emergency emerges. And when the emergency emerges, you don't have time to learn it. It's time to fight. And the way you fight, even if our country, or any part of us has to go to violence at any point, that won't do the trick. Because even after the violence is over, there must be law in place. Men must understand law. Why was our separation from Britain successful? All of the rest of the so-called revolutions, ours wasn't a revolution in the sense of the rest of the world, all the rest of them have failed. The Red Revolution of the Bolsheviks of Russia of 1917, October 1917, failed. Those people starved for 75 years. They're still not doing that great. It didn't work. All the rest of the satellite Russian countries. Freedom doesn't exist in those kind of places. They have to scuttle it and then incorporate somehow free markets and true law or promises, contracts, or they'll go down too. The French Revolution was just a revolution of bloodshed and violence. It got rid of what they wanted to get rid of. It wreaked vengeance on other men, but they were worse off after it was over than before the revolution, same way with Russia. Same way with the Communist Revolution in the Korea Peninsula. Well, we in America have a different set of machinery in place, and we're just blamed fools if we don't sink our teeth into our law of the land, our common law, learn the distinction between it and the law of the city, and bury it in our minds, hide it in our hearts, know it. You want to be great, don't seek to be great. You want to do great things, don't seek to do great things. Well, what do you do then to be great? You quietly spend long, long hours and days by yourself or with a few others trying to learn the law of the land. John Wycliffe translated the laws of nature's God, as was mentioned earlier in this presentation, translated the laws of nature's God into the English tongue for the first time. He's the first one to ever put the Bible in our native tongue. He did it back in the 13th century. Before he was 50 years old, nobody ever heard of him. He labored in utter obscurity from the time he was 14 to the time he was 50. Nobody had ever heard of him. He was a recluse, stayed by himself, and buried the true law in his mind and heart. And when he broke forth on the scene, he didn't just translate the Bible into English. He said, we've got to make sure that the law of the land, our common law here in England, supplants, removes the canon law of Rome from our universities, because the universities are products of Rome, and the canon law, scholasticism of Aquinas, governed Oxford, governed Cambridge, governed all the universities of Europe. He said, we got to get rid of it, or it's going to destroy us. It will continue to grow like a cancer until it takes our freedom, the imperial law. Well, those are the things that came to mind while John was talking a while ago. Appreciate his comments. Let me talk just a little bit about our Constitution of the United States, because we're going through it. This is a fascinating clause. I'll just cover this one probably. I'll do this one. Important, a subject of much discussion among patriot groups. It's Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, says this: no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now watch what I say here. This clause bars the general government in Washington, D.C. from giving anyone a title of nobility. It doesn't say that you always need to ask yourself, what does it not say? That's as important as asking yourself what it does say. It'll clarify the questions. It does not say that the general government of the United States cannot grant a title. It doesn't say that. Matter of fact, the general government, Washington, does that a lot. You're the czar of education. You're a congressman. You're a Supreme Court justice. We'll call you your honor when you sit on the bench. Well, that's observing titles. But those aren't titles of nobility. What is a title of nobility? A title of nobility is a title that is inheritable by blood descent. Not just a title. This says no title of nobility. If I say to somebody, Mr. or Mrs. or Ma'am or Sir, or even if I say Kentucky Colonel, the state of Kentucky, since the earliest days of statehood, way back in the 1700s, right after our war for separation from Britain, they started then recognizing what they called colonels of Kentucky, the Kentucky colonels. And even yet today, the governor of Kentucky has the power to grant the title Kentucky colonel. Originally, the Kentucky colonels were veterans of the war. I like to call it the war for the separation of Britain, because it truly wasn't a revolution. And when it was over, we didn't have to learn anything new. We just had to continue the things we had been asking the government in England for a long time, our common law constitution. Well, we wrote it down, and we've got it now. But the Kentucky Colonels was a veterans organization. It was like the VFW. And they even had a special place in Washington, D.C., when the Kentucky colonels came there, that where they would meet. It was a certain pub, where they would go and they would drink and discuss politics. And nobody was allowed in that particular place. They eventually bought it and made it theirs. And you couldn't come in there unless you were invited by one of the Kentucky colonels. In fact, the Supreme Court Justice Marshall needed to talk to one of the Kentucky colonels once, and he went there, and the doorman met him, and he said, you can't come in, Mr. Supreme Court Justice. See, there's another title, but it's not inheritable. You can't come in. And so He said, well, send this note in, carry this in to one of the Kentucky colonels there and that I want to talk to. And they sent back to him, and this fellow said, I don't want you to come in right now. Now, he's saying this to a Supreme Court justice, and I don't want to talk to you right now. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do, though, in his note, his message back to Justice Marshall. He said, I will, if you can write me a poem that tickles my innards, he said, I'll let you in. So Marshall got out his, he knew those fellows were in there drinking whiskey, so he got out his pencil and a piece of paper, and he wrote a poem. And the poem went like this. It said, in the bluegrass of Kentucky, a mystery is born. The cornfields are filled with kernels, and the kernels are filled with corn. And he sent that back to him, and it did tickle him, and he let him in. But see, that's a title, Supreme Court Justice, Kentucky Colonel, that's not inheritable. Such titles of common respect are not inherited by blood descent. Therefore, that's not a title of nobility, if it's not inheritable by blood descent. In England, the titles are inheritable by blood descent. If you're a noble or a knight in England, your children, your oldest son inherits that title. And he can sit, if he's part of the nobility, he can sit then in the House of Lords if he wants. National officials, it says, may never accept any gift, office, payment, or title from a foreign power without getting Congress's consent. Now, if Congress consents, it says, you can accept this gift, office, payment, or title. So it's not an absolute prohibition, according to this clause. An attorney on the rolls of the federal courts of the United States holds an office of trust under the United States. It talks here about an office of profit or trust. Well, a fellow on the rolls of the federal court, I'm on the rolls of a federal court, a federal appellate court, and that's not an inheritable title. It just means that I got a permission to argue cases in front of that federal appellate court. But that bars, or that because he's on the rolls, because I'm on the rolls, for example, that bars me from accepting any gift from any foreign power without permission from the United States Congress. Now, don't stop to consider how widespread this can be, because there are hundreds, for example, hundreds of military officers, hundreds of lawyers that are on the rolls of the federal courts. This applies to them. But the title squire given to a lawyer, or esquire, is barred to an attorney in the United States only if a foreign power has granted that title. Now, the Patriot groups say that these titles, squire and esquire, are granted by the King of England. That's why that's a foreign power, you see. And therefore, our Constitution says lawyers can't call themselves that. Well, that would be true if the Queen of England had granted that title to lawyers within the United States. I know of no lawyer in the United States, never met one, never heard of anyone that carried a title granted by the Queen of England. However, if Congress said it was okay for this person or that person to do that, it'd be okay. It'd be lawful. It'd be constitutional. Now, I do have a friend that's a member of, he's a barrister of the courts of Wales and England, and Cornwall, Wales and England really is only one to really matter, I suppose, but all those places. But he doesn't have a title of nobility from those places. He's a lawyer here in the United States. I work with him pretty often. So there's more to this clause. Just look at it, read it for what it says, and then ask yourself a few questions. If, as pertaining to any particular person, is this a problem? Is this true? Is it from a foreign power? Is there permission from Congress? In most cases, there isn't permission from Congress, but in most cases, there is no title from a foreign power either. Now, this clause, however, does not apply to an attorney licensed to practice before the courts of the several states. This clause only talks about officers before the government of the states united, the United States. Now, the next clause does talk about the states and says pretty much the same thing. And we'll get to that, no doubt, in time. But right now, we're just talking about the government of the United States. And these titles, as I said, are not titles of nobility unless inheritable by blood. Thus, because the U.S. recognizes, for example, the Vatican to be a sovereign state, remember that happened under Ronald Reagan. Our government in the United States would ever recognize, never did recognize the Vatican as a foreign state. Ronald Reagan did that. So that being true, this clause would apply to the Vatican. So if any court of the United States, any federal court, accepts orders or organizations from the Vatican, that's a clear violation of this clause to bar such an attorney's acceptance of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, any prince, or any foreign state. Is the Vatican a foreign state? Yes, according to our government, has recognized it as a foreign state. Is the Pope a prince? Yes, he is the prince. He is the primary. That's what prince means. He is the principal one in charge of that foreign state. Therefore, any title given by him to anyone in the United States holding any trust under the United States is violating the Constitution. Now, ask yourself some questions about that. What titles does the Pope of Rome grant to people in the United States? The following related amendment, which is Section 10, Clause 1, proposed in 1810, well, it isn't Section 10, Clause 1. Section 10, Clause 1 is the one that's here. This is the one that was proposed in the year 1810. It was likely ratified in the year 1819, but it remains contested. It forbids split loyalties, such as dual citizenship, which now invades even the president's cabinet, the president of the United States, and our federal benches, I should say. If observed, it would root the disloyal from national and state governments. It says this. This was proposed in the year 1810, and it appears to have been ratified in 1819, but it's not included in our Constitution. Nobody recognizes it. It says this. If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present, pension, office, or emolument of any kind whatever from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be, this is pretty harsh, shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them or either of them. Well, that's my comments concerning Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8. And next week, Lord willing, we'll talk about how this applies to the states in the next clause of our Constitution. Again, thank you, John, and back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to take calls if anybody's got any questions or comments. We only got a couple people in the queue right now. Star 6 to get into the queue. Star 6, and then I think it'll tell you to hit a 1 or something. But star 6, and then after that, a 1 to get into the queue. All right, we'll take our first caller here. Let's see, 612, what's your first name and your state? You got the mic. Area code 612, you've got the mic. 0490. Looked like you did something, made some kind of noise there.
Okay, yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay, yes. So in filing the jurisdiction, what actually should I be researching as far as the steps after that?
In filing the what?
So I applied for the joinder. I just filled out the paperwork.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, James will take you through it. And And by the way, anybody who wants to file a joinder, please don't get ahead of yourselves here with this, because you know James will move very slowly and carefully through the procedure, so we get everything right, the paperwork right, everything filled out and filed properly, and so on and so forth. It could be done rather quickly if you just go through the process and just through the instructions step by step by step. But again, don't get in ahead of anything, because then that trips everything else up here. We got to keep a control and a focus on the paperwork. But generally speaking, first order is to really fill out some information on a form, get it to intake at nationalliberty.org. That's where James will be to take that information. And he usually can turn around pretty quick. He'll take that, put it into a form, and get it back to you, which you would then sign, and we'd move forward from there. That would be the petition. We need the people to request us to join their case. We can't just join someone's case to our case. And then after that, the process is, and I mentioned a little earlier, I'll just say it real quickly, first order of business is we file what's called an amicus curiae into the existing court, challenging their jurisdiction, letting them know they don't have jurisdiction, they're denying due process, and they need to cease and desist and return the individual, whoever it is, the petitioner, back to the original state before this craziness started. They'll probably default within 30 days. Then we move to the next step, which is filing the moving of the case into the federal court, which is then joined to our case. And then it goes through the process for decision-making on that case and moving forward from there. So, again, just follow the instructions step by step by James. We did have the full set of instructions up there at one point where people can, step one, step two, step three, and so on. But that, I think, became too complex, and people were making too many mistakes and getting confused. So we need to go through this one step at a time. But James can respond pretty quickly as long as you just follow the instructions on each step, and you can move things quickly through the process. Okay?
Okay. Yes, thanks. That clears everything up. Thank you.
All right. And James will probably, you can get a hold of James at intake@nationalliberty.org. Make sure you put your phone number in there, because he'll probably give you a call and talk to you to walk you through the process. Okay, thanks. We'll take our next caller.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Next caller is Crystal. How are you doing, Crystal? 203. I know you've been trying to get a hold of me, and I've been really, really matter of fact, I've shut everything down for about 5 days because I just got to get this paperwork done. But anyway, Crystal, you got the mic. Crystal Mack, are you there? Did we lose you? Jan, maybe tomorrow we get a chance. I know Crystal's been trying to get a hold of me. Maybe you can get a hold of her and find out what she's calling about or what she wants to talk about, and then maybe we can set a meeting up or something. Okay? Did you get that, Jan? Or are you away from your mic also? All right, one more time for Crystal. Crystal. Okay, we'll take our next caller. And again, if anybody wants to get in the queue, we only got a few people in the queue, *6 and 1 to get into the queue. Let's go to Audrey from New York. You got the mic. Audrey from New York, you've been unmuted. You got the mic. I guess we're putting people asleep here. Audrey, one more time. Audrey from New York, 585 area code. You've got the mic, Audrey. Going once, twice, one more time for Audrey from New York. Okay, we'll go to the next caller. Next caller is the 715 area code. Give us your first name and your state.
Yeah, my name is Steve, Wisconsin.
How you doing, Steve?
Not too bad. See, I've been talking with Jim a little bit I filed a couple of these tax foreclosure things last year, like May of 2018.
We did a paper for you for a foreclosure?
There was two of them.
Yeah, someone should have gotten to you, and if not, they haven't. You know, we're going to have a meeting this week and make sure we catch up to everybody. You know, we can't really just work on your case without having your permission to join us. So the only thing, anybody that we've done a foreclosure paper to assist them with a foreclosure, an unjudicial foreclosure, or a habeas corpus, and we've got quite a few people we've done that for, all they need to do is fill out the joinder, and we're going to pursue your case. I think in the cases we're going to go, we may give these people one more chance to respond with the threat of, you know, executing the law upon them, which is an indictment. But we're going to be meeting this week to talk about that and try to figure out whether we want to just go straight to an indictment for all these judges. After all, we've got people in prison, and they've ignored these habeas corpuses. We've got people losing their homes, and they're ignoring the information we're giving them, the fact that they're breaking the law, that this is all unlawful. We've explained how these mortgage companies and even the tax man, so to speak, trying to take the house for taxes, how they're breaking the law and what they're doing, and they just are ignoring it and moving forward. It's time to do something. So anyway, if that's what you're asking about, just get a hold of James, fill out the joinder, and we'll take it from there. We're going to be looking a little deeper into that and try to make a decision on how we're going to go on that.
Okay. Well, I did fill those out, but I guess there was some – I don't want to speak for Jim, but I don't know. I don't know if he was sure what to do with it or if
Well, we were putting things together a while ago, and what we originally had, you may have filled it out yourself, and that was with the original paperwork, which I guess we were giving people too much information, and so we stepped it back, that we filled the joinder out for you. It's a form to begin with, and we just have to put the details, you know, like the name of the court, the individuals involved, and your name and so on, and really it's a petition. And so we fill it out. We just got to collect a little bit of information from you, then we fill it out, get it to you in the email, and then you mail it out to us and send a copy to James, and then we'll move it from there. Any steps we're going to take at that point, we'll discuss individually as we move forward. We haven't made an exact decision on how we're going to go forward with the older ones. I've always been thinking going right to a indictment, and we may just do that. But we'll see.
Okay.
Was it filled out the paper? You actually filled out a joinder paper.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be, you have to go back to James and have him create. He could do it in a day and get it done for you. And we're going to try to push this forward. Anybody that's got a papers from the past that we filed in for them, you know, just pay attention because we're going to be trying to call you, and if you need to, get a hold of James. As a matter of fact, anybody that's listening, get a hold of James. Get the paperwork done. It's that simple. James, it's intake@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to our next caller. It's Barbara from New York. You got the mic.
Hi, this is Barbara from New York. New York State, and I was looking at through the coursework with the issue of the civil lawyers and how political they are and the groups that they're in, like the National Lawyers Guild, and I came across some opinion about how you've got these people, the bar lawyers, trained in the what to do in the courtroom, and yet you have them throughout the whole government in the administrative executive role, and you've got them in the legislative role, and then you've got them in, you know, in judiciary, and it's like the separation of powers.
They have total control of every aspect of our government. Go ahead.
Yeah. And the separation of powers isn't there the way it should be. It's like, you know, they may all belong to the bar, probably most of them do. They may all belong to, you know, various legal groups together. And it's just a block. And I was looking at the whole thing about the Esquire title, and I thought it came automatically with a bar license, but then I saw it didn't, and that I don't know. I don't really understand it. I saw that some comments online, the lawyers were responding to some questions saying, you know, I can call myself an Esquire or not, it doesn't matter. I thought the original 13th Amendment was there to keep, you know, the statutory lawyer out of a position in government, mm-hmm. but it's not. Is that right?
Well, that's a good question, and, you know, I thought I had it pretty solid, and maybe I do, but I was listening to what Brent had to say tonight, and very interesting. I'm going to be looking into that concerning the fact that it needs to be something that you can pass on in an inheritance, and that would be the type of title
yeah.
that's being spoken about. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, and, you know, I trust Brent quite a bit because he does his research very solid. He usually has good sources, and you can, you know, anything he has to say, if you read his books, anything he's got to say, you can, if you want to look into it, he's got
oh,
all the sources.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And, of course, we do the same thing here. But here's the big problem. You know, here is the big problem. Titles are no titles. It's a conspiracy. And again, you know, you got the ABA, which is the American Bar Association, and then if you got the British Bar, you know, and the connection from Britain to here is definitely there. There is a paper that we had filed with the courts. I'm just looking real quickly to get the name of it. Congress's report on the Lawyers Guild. Okay. And
yeah.
back then when that report was done and put out and Congress, it was really had a lot to do with the Rees Committee. Norman Dodd, was the head of the Rees Committee. You know, he was appointed as lead legal individual. And he also filed a report, a conclusion on this. But Congress filed a report on the Lawyers Guild. And it says here, and this is just the beginning of the report, this is the 79th Congress, first session. It was written. I'm looking for a year here if I can see it.
Oh.
Okay. September 21st, 1950. And it says that
okay.
the National Lawyers Guild is the foremost legal bulwark of the Communist Party. Its
mm-hmm.
front organization and controlled unions, since its inception, it has never failed to rally to the legal defense of the Communist Party and individual members thereof, including known espionage agents. And then it goes on and on and on. It's a 60-page report. Okay. So they were uncovering they referred to it as un-American activities. The investigation was taking place to look into
uh-huh.
un-American activities taking place within our government. And again, the results was this report, and of course the report that Norman Dodd wrote concerning the conspiracy, and that there was a conspiracy, and everything went out in Congress, and we would think, well, something's going to happen, and they're going to fix the problem, but then everything
uh-huh.
went silent. Okay, so going
yeah.
silent on this thing
uh-huh.
Means that I'm sure that people were threatened and lives were threatened and families
yeah.
were threatened and so on and so forth. This is the way these people work. They're very violent people. And so inside, here's the problem, and I can't say this for all law schools, you know, because, again, from talking with Brent and getting some of his knowledge and experience, after all, he is a lawyer, and... But those individuals that went through a bar control school, maybe I don't know who makes the curriculum. It's like for instance, the pharmaceutical companies control the entire medical system. The entire medical system is built around the pharmaceutical companies. They're the ones that really decide on the bottom line what these doctors are going to learn and what they're not going to learn. And
really?
Oh absolutely.
Huh.
And the same thing happens with the bar. Now, there are different organizations of bars. For instance, this particular one was referred to as the National Lawyers Guild, okay? And so did I get disconnected here? No, I'm still here. Okay. This was focused in directly, specifically on the Lawyers Guild. But here's the problem. The poison that these people put out, and that was trying to be, crushed in 1950, okay, and the poison that they have already put out and the poison they continue to put out. And if you talk to lawyers, okay, almost across the board, all right, with few exceptions, there are people who are accepting to this. And I think the people that are a real exception to this are the thinkers. You see, these schools, just like all of our schools, you know, it is really... they got an end result to the schools. It's, what do they call it? Let me think what they call it. I'm not sure exactly, but it's sort of end-based education. I forget exactly what the words are there.
End-based?
I'm sorry. Yeah, in other words, the education is built around points that they want to make at the end of the education. They want to, you know, ultimately... create the mindset in the individuals going through school, okay? Our children, for instance, in school are not being taught how to think. They're being taught what to think, okay? And this has taken place in many places. You know, if you go into things that are very important that's controlling, like, the medical system, there's an end result, and they want the doctors to be giving out their pharmaceuticals and stay in the process of that they've created back in the early 1900s of how the medical field was going to go forward and how they're going to deal with cancer and so on and so forth. And everything, you know, there's a money at the end of the day on all of these different pharmaceuticals. They want the people to be given pharmaceuticals, and that's why they go through the control, the medical schools, and the end results of their thinking.
Okay.
But those individuals that are thinkers, that can't be taken away from them, and maybe they've gone to school, maybe they haven't, but generally speaking, most of them have. But they go beyond that, and they think it out, and they find, contradictions as they learn, and they're just people who are free thinking. And they will bring up the point that, hey, you know, for instance, the common law. If you talk to most lawyers, they will tell you that the common law is a collection of decisions from the trial courts and the Supreme Court and the appellate court, appellate courts and then up into the Supreme Court, that it's a collection of all that is the common law. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, because all of that is within equity to begin with, so it doesn't even make sense. But they don't know that. I have found that lawyers, generally speaking, and again, there's always an exception, those people who, and maybe there are schools that have been teaching things right. So there may be groups of lawyers out there that really got it right. But the point is there's a conspiracy. And the whole thing is a control of our government. And I call these people, the bar attorneys, generally speaking, the minions of the New World Order. They're the ones that control everything. If you go and get into a problem with any kind of a bureaucrat at any level, from a clerk all the way up to any elected individual, as soon as you get in and you say, well, wait a second, I think you're wrong, well, that's, as far as they're concerned, they don't want to hear no more at that point. You're telling me I'm wrong, you know. The next thing you know, you met lawyers, okay? There's a filter between you and that individual, and you never get to really deal with the problem that you're dealing with that bureaucrat. You've met with the lawyers who will give you a call and so on and so forth, and this has happened to me many times. And anybody that's fucking the system, you'll find that. To the point, especially in the courts, as you push, the harder you push, next thing you know, there's not just a whole bunch of, lawyers that might respond to you, but you also, all of a sudden, you got, the force of the police behind you, you know. So this is a huge problem. Now, there is no doubt these people are being taught in schools, most schools, okay, most bar schools, okay, or the bar-supported schools, let's say, they're being taught a certain curriculum. They're not being taught the common law. They're not being taught the Constitution. They're not being taught the necessary things that they need to know that anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. They're not being taught that people are not to be held under statutes in equity court. that there's no such thing as a criminal court and a civil court. Those are foreign courts to us. They definitely are not courts of record because they proceed through statutes, and they use, and on a federal level, they use titles that are for the law of the sea and not the law of the land, under USC Title 18, okay? So this is a conspiracy, okay? This is a serious problem. It affects every one of our elected individuals. You go talk to anybody elected, and you will find, I'll bet you 99 out of 100, and probably more than that, that they have no clue on what the Constitution says. They have no clue or knowledge of their true jurisdiction and what they can really do and can't do. They have no idea. All of these judges on the, for instance, below the county level, whether the town, village, and city, all those judges at that level, they truly believe, okay, that they are applying the law of the land. They truly believe they have the power and the authority to do this, and they do not. And again, as I mentioned earlier, as long as the people sitting in those courtrooms believe that they have that power too, then they'll continue with their power. And it's not until the people come to an understanding of what true liberty is. And true liberty is freedom from all legislative power. True liberty is freedom from any involvement of the government sticking their nose or their fingers into any part of your life. Okay? That's liberty. That's the liberty our founding fathers spoke about. It's not the fact that I can put on brown shoes or black shoes today, or the fact that I can get in my car and drive across the border into New Jersey or Connecticut and no one's going to give me a hard time. That's not the true liberty, although that, of course, is liberty, the right to travel and so on and so forth. But the liberty that causes the problem, you know, look, if your right to travel, automatically it gets right to laws when all of a sudden they tell you you have to have a license. And then put all these other requirements upon you here and requirements upon you there. You can't do this to your house. You can't put this in your front yard. You can't put a fence here than that. I mean, who are these people? Well, controlling us. Okay, so this is the big difference, and this is the problem. And again, we have this problem because lawyers are being taught everything necessary to destroy our liberties. And the very first place, they want to get to everybody. And where do you get to them? You get them right in their own hometown. You start off with the town courts. You start off with everything going there, controlling, you know, whatever you want to do to your property, and I mean, all kinds of things. It's a statutory prison that they have been building. They believe it's the law, and it's no law at all. That's a huge problem. And that's where the problem exists, and that's what we have to deal with.
Yeah, I'm just amazed. I was looking at the National Lawyers Guild, and I thought, well, it's 8,000 members. That's not that much. And then I looked some more, and I saw that one of their strategies is to have an overarching connection with 193 organizations where they create a unified revolutionary force. That's their own words. So you see that they have a connection with these other groups, and they're supposed to be groups which I saw described as people injured by capitalism. And I think, oh, you know, what is this? It seems, you said it's a conspiracy. And then I looked at the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, lawyers. And that's clearly planned, and that's supposed to be, have a strong association with the National Lawyers Guild. Is the fact that these lawyers are all over the place in this country, somebody planned that? Is that what you're saying?
Of course. Absolutely. That's part of the conspiracy to take control of our government. Look at, you know, the big thing out there that's been taught you know, everywhere is, you know, what it is that Rothschild has said, give me control of the nation's money and I cannot, who makes the laws, I cannot, I'll control that whole country. That is absolutely not true. That's a lie. To me, I think that's a diversion. They're trying to really take your attention away from the real power. Of course, it's true. Controlling the money does control the nation. But that in itself is not sufficient for them to survive. You must control courts. You must control...
Yeah.
You got to control the legislators. So you got to control the judicial process. And that's why, you know, nothing happens in Congress without a bunch of lawyers working on it. And that's okay. Look, it, they're writing law, okay, that identifies, that is, to deal with powers and authorities we gave them through Article 1, Section 8. We gave them 18 powers, 17 powers plus the power to write laws for all of those other 17 powers. And so that's the authority or the power that we've given them. All right. So we do need people who are educated in certain areas to be able to exercise the law in a courtroom on either side. We need people who are educated in those areas in order to write the laws and so on. So we do need people educated in those areas. The problem is they seize control. And what they did is they abrogated parts of the law. First of all, they took equity and made everything equity and abrogated the law. The law is natural law in natural law courts called courts of record run by the people. Nobody that works for the government, whether they're elected, appointed, or just employed, nobody that works for the government, okay, well, where was the point I was going with that?
Taking equity and making it statutory.
Okay. Right. Nobody that's working for the government, okay, that's writing law particularly, okay, is doing anything with the law itself. In other words, they've abrogated the law itself, and they've put equity everywhere, okay? And that's the problem that we have. No matter where you go, it's nothing but lawyers. But they believe this. Why do they believe this? Because they were taught this. And I was reading up on an article said that the average lawyer paid $205,000. And I don't know how old that is. Maybe that's recent or 20 years ago. But $205,000 in order to get their education, in order to get their shingled, you know, their so-called license in order to practice law. Okay? And so when you tell someone like that they don't know what they're talking about, or that they don't know, they haven't been taught about the law, or you try to explain to them that equity is not law, that the statutory process doesn't apply to the people, well, after all, they paid $205,000 to get this certificate, and obviously I went to school, you're a nobody, and you just get ignored, you know? And this is a major problem. And this is what our battle is, to really to educate the people and to educate those who are in our courts. And hopefully there's going to be some good people in our courts and in the system that's going to get behind us and move aside and accept the people coming in and taking control of this system. Because in a court of law, okay, no elected or appointed individual is permitted to participate in the process other than to administrate the end results. In other words, they're like the traffic cop. They make sure things get moving along. Maybe they prevent things. They keep the order of the court, okay, and they keep things moving. But at the end of the day, the end results, they get to decide nothing. It's not a judge. He may be a judge, but all judges are magistrate. They're wearing their magistrate cap in a court of law, and they're not to participate in any of the process. They are only there to record the will of the tribunal, unadulterated. They do not nose in to say, I'm going to tell you what the law is. You get to decide the facts, but I'll tell you what the law is. No. We will decide whether we like that law or not. And in this case, maybe we don't like that law. If there is a law to be applied, and that is rare, okay, because in most cases, you know, in those cases, that would really be people that are in a court of law that's at sea, or the event took place at sea, you know, not on the land, under maritime law, and therefore laws are applied against them. But as far as the people are concerned, there is no statute to be applied upon any of us. We are just under the laws of nature, and which is God, period.
Okay.
And until people get that and understand that point and start living, making decisions and reading and understanding things with that in mind, we're not going to be free. So people need to wake up to take these things in.
So the overall situation of having lawyers trained in statutory law is a conspiracy. It's orchestrated,
but remember, they seized. Hold on. Remember, they have seized a system that is required and necessary in order to run a government. We need statutes. We need regulations. We need code.
Right.
Control the agencies, the elected individuals, the people, Congress. Everybody needs to have be under a control. Okay, where it limits their jurisdiction, limits their abilities, and to seize this or to do that or not to do this. And we need that, and we need people who are trained lawyers in this area, that way, or any other area. The problem is they've taken this. They should have been taught not only the law that they're, you know, the general idea of law, which is statutes and stuff. And again, I don't know how they, you know, I don't know how things work on that, but they teach them, I guess, how to look at law and whatever it is they teach them in law school. But they never get around to the law itself. They're always there with equity, and everything is equity, and law is equity, and courts are courts with judges and that are political animals, and there's an appellate system and all that stuff. You see, with a court of record, one decision and the subject, game over. There is no appeal from a court of record. That's the people. The people have spoken. 12 individuals have spoken, and that's the end game. There's nothing else to talk about. Now, they don't like that, and they don't like the fact that they don't have control over that, because that could be their demise, because after all, if we don't control the grand juries, maybe they'll come indicting us. If we don't control the trial juries, you know, we got to get our convictions, number one. And we certainly don't want to be convicted in these courts. We have to control all this. And that's their big fear, in my opinion. The problem is there's a lot of temptation with lawyers. There's so much involved, money involved in all of these things that lawyers do, okay?
Uh-huh.
And there's such corruption going on, okay, that they have to control the system in order to continue. Otherwise, they'd all be in jail. And I shouldn't say all, but most of them. Again, you do have good lawyers, people who are self-educated. Maybe there's some schools that teach law well. I don't know how that all works. But generally, most of them, they got big problems.
Yeah, I just wanted to understand. You were saying definitely at the local level, they were clueless about how they're applying it. You know, as you say, they're misapplying it on the actual people as opposed to the administrators. But I just want to know if all the way up in the higher courts, they also don't realize that they're misapplying it.
They don't realize what?
That the bar attorneys also don't realize that they're misapplying
it. They believe the lies they were taught. Absolutely,
okay.
They do.
They do. Okay.
And only, right. Look, I went to the School of Hard Knocks to learn not to trust what just other people say. You know, and it's a biblical principle. Let God be true and every man a liar. That's a biblical principle.
Wait, I'm
so
sorry.
Whatever
I didn't catch the whole thing.
Man,
what was it?
Whatever a man tells me, let me make this point. If whenever a man tells me anything, okay, that is of any value to be exercised, okay, I need to check that out to make sure it's sure, it's true.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I've taken those practices right into what I'm doing right here. And people need to take it that way. You need to check them out, you know.
Yes.
Believe, but what is it that Reagan said? The trust, but verify.
Yes,
okay?
Right. Skepticism,
and you know what?
So
nothing
important.
Nothing burns me more than I'm trying to look up something on the Internet, and you go to get information, and you got all these quote-unquote intellectuals, and they're telling you everything about the subject, but they never express the subject itself. And generally speaking, let's just take the Constitution. They'll go on and on and on, the meanings and this and that, but they'll never read the actual words, okay? Nor will they actually even lead you down to the understanding of other men that discussed these things and brought this, like, for instance, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and the writings of our fathers. They never bring you to those points. All they want is give you their conclusions, okay? Uh-huh. And if you talk to them, you find out they're just regurgitating someone else that told them the conclusions. They themselves know nothing. But if you're going to learn about the Constitution, let's open up the Constitution, let's read it, and let's talk about the meanings of words, the meanings of the phrases, what our founding fathers had to say about this, some of the debates, some history. Let's look to see what's actually going on here, okay?
Right.
Let's be thinkers. But from kindergarten on, and even before that, you know, they send kids to school at age 3. In my opinion, that's damaging. It's destructive to a child to put them into that kind of a situation. Even at 5 or 6, my opinion's too young. But in any event, they grab these kids, and what they do is they teach them what to think, not how to think. They don't not teach them a classical education how to think. They just don't give it to them.
Right. Right.
All right, Barbara. I'm going to move on to the next call. Thank you. Okay, our next caller is a 207 area code. You got the mic. 207. Give us the first state.
Hello. Hi. This is Jan. I'm a new member, or at least about to be. And I was wondering if you could answer several questions for me.
Sure. What state are you from?
New York.
New York. Okay. Go right ahead.
Firstly, does one get a member list by any chance? Does one have access to a member list, phone numbers, whatever?
Anybody who wanted their information put out there, it's in there, usually the leadership. So if you go to the directory and just click on the directory, you will find all kinds of information on that page. You'll come down. But even in just highlight the directory. You have site contacts. You have the federal district leaders. You have state coordinators. You have county organizers. You can find your own state group. You know, all kinds of different things. And when you go in there, you'll get the names and phone numbers of, for instance, people who are state coordinators or county organizers and so on and so forth. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people take those positions and they're not very active. We need everyone that's taken those positions to be active in their state, to build up their state, to build up their local, groups of people at the grassroots level.
Is there a phone number for James and Brent?
If you want to talk to James, or you talk about it for intake?
Yeah,
you could send James an email at intake at nationallibertyalliance.org if you just have a question concerning things or whatever, follow the process. But get information from him concerning the intake stuff. If you want to talk to Brent, you can go to his website, and there's contact information on Brent's website. Go to commonlawyer.com. Okay. And then, of course, you want to talk to the leadership here at National Liberty Alliance. It's right on the it's on the directory page. You'll see right up the top, the national coordinator is Jan. You have his phone number. And again, we have a lot of information, but people, just general members, do not have their phone numbers up on just listed. Only the people who have taken on certain positions, their phone numbers are automatically there so other people can contact them.
Well, I don't know. I must be typing in the wrong thing because I looked at the membership.
Are you at nationallibertyalliance.org?
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you see on the line it says directory?
Yeah.
Click on the word directory, and you'll get the main leadership right there.
Okay.
And then you can get deeper and deeper into the leadership. For instance, if you're in New York, okay, like I am, I'm in New York, you can click on New York. Okay, you'll find that Kevin is a state coordinator for New York. And when you get to New York, it's broken up by leadership by county, Albany County, the Bronx, Broome, Erie, Greene, Kings, and so on and so forth, all the way down. And you'll find some leaders in there. Now, these here, people listed on this are county organizers, okay? Now, again, all members are not listed here. Only those people who take up the position of a county organizer or a state coordinator, those people are listed.
Okay, that's great. And now I'll ask you some really poignant questions. I think most of the people that have resisted or have corrected their status in some way have been labeled by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And,
right, like us. We've been labeled that. And we haven't even put out anything like that.
There's an article that blocks you when you type in National Liberty Alliance, and it comes in to explain this sovereign citizen stuff. I'm wondering how we can get, because I wrote when Jeff Sessions was in as the Attorney General, I wrote to him about this, because immediately the police label you as soon as you resist or you don't have a license or any of these challenges.
Yeah, but we're not those people. We're not those people. We don't teach people not to have licenses. We don't teach people to go put a declaration and develop your status in the county by filing it in your county. We don't teach people to get rid of their birth certificate, to deny their citizenship or a citizenship or any of those things, okay? Look at some of those things there are problems with. They're unlawful to require. The birth certificate, for instance, Social Security number, your driver's license, and so on and so forth. But the problem, of course, really is dealing with the law. Let's get the law reestablished, start exercising the law, and then all those other problems will become fixed. I have thought very seriously about those people over there and various other individuals, but maybe that's what they want me to do, to take my time away from this, or all of us to be doing those things
doing. I really think that this should be challenged. First of all, a sovereign citizen is an oxymoron, so...
Mm-hmm. Right.
You cannot have.
That's not true. I disagree with that. I'm sorry that I said right. I shouldn't have said right. No, look at
it.
A sovereign citizen.
And you can't be a citizen subject.
Sure, you can.
No, you cannot be.
You say that, but look at. Being sovereign is one thing, and being a citizen of this country or of this nation or of this state is another thing, okay? And our founding fathers used the word citizen. It's just that they've destroyed the meaning of it, okay? And it is true that citizenship puts you under civics or civil law, okay? But we don't have civil law in this country, although, you know, they claim we do. We really don't, okay? All of that is just statutes that should not be applying to us. We have to fix that problem. If you want to fight the name game, then at the end of the day, you still get nowhere. But if you fight the problem, okay, and apply the law properly, now you fix everything underneath it, okay?
But
because
haven't you been fighting the law, John, for years and years? Huh? Where's it gotten? Haven't you been fighting and challenging the law? Where's it gotten you?
Well, yeah, but look at, we discovered looking at the law back in 2013. Prior to that, we were trying to take over the political process by teaching people to become committeemen. Then we found out that you can't be empowered there because they've done something to take away the elected committeemen, and they don't recognize the people who have become elected committeemen. So there's no power, no authority. You can't take control. The people on the grassroots level cannot take control of the process. It's still a top-down organization. So from there, it led us, when we found United States versus Williams, it empowered us, and we had made a decision that we were going to sue, okay? And it was around that time when we were making the decision we were going to sue, a lot of these different committees. We were suing the state and different things because of what they did with the committeemen. During that process, we found United States versus Williams, and it clicked, and we realized that as we were going through the courts and fighting the courts, we were fighting cases in New York State, and we were learning how things worked, and we were very naive and ignorant to things, and we learned the school of hard knocks. But we came through the process, and we discovered that the courts are fixed. You can't win. Everything is status quo. You can't get justice. And that's around the time when we discovered the United States versus Williams, and we realized the power and the authority really is in the juries. Then we found out that the juries are stacked. They're statutorized. It's just a mess. So then we realized, okay, well, we got to build a case. And but we had to first build a membership. We had to build a national membership. We had to get people in every state. We had to get organized. We had to get education going. We had to put together a lot of things. We put together courses. We gathered together huge amounts of information on subject matters, particularly in law and in history, but other things too, and how the political process works, how the judicial process works, how to access the courts. We created the anatomy of a court case to teach people all these things, okay? All of that had to be constructed and built while we were fighting cases in court and learning how things were working, being thrown out constantly. That's fine. Hey, look at, you know, the best education is failure. Failure is the best educator, because anybody who's not out there failing is not really out there learning, okay? So we've learned a lot. And we've learned how things really work. We learned how things should be, okay? And as time went on, okay, we then started to develop a process, okay? We started our court case officially in December 2016. That was the official start of this court case that we're in right now, okay? But it really started, we started filing papers, or serving papers a year before. So in that process of filing papers, and in the process of now filing and serving papers, okay, filing them in the courts under the auspices of the courts, start exercising our authorities as the people, we've done some indictments, we've done some informations to courts and individuals and other elected individuals making corrections. And what have they done? They've ignored us. They've remained silent. We've given them show causes, and they have done nothing to respond to that. They haven't even moving in this particular case. Well, yeah, they did move with the 12, or a couple of lawyers did. But the bottom line is that...
So have you done the administrative process to default them? I mean, how do you prevail?
So look at, because of what we're going to do now, everything, the trial has been going on for 2 years, okay? Whether they know it or not, there's been a trial going on for 2 years, and they have defaulted at every level, and they have broken the most holy bond or relationship with the people, and that is to be silent when they had duties to speak, okay? So now we're getting ready to file the paper. You know, you can lose all the battles. You just want to win the war. That's the key thing, okay? If you win a lot of battles but you lose the war, you've lost everything. So the key thing is winning the law, winning the war, okay? So we have lost a lot of battles from their perspective, but not from ours, because all we've done is every action they have taken, everything that they have not done or everything they did do to assault us in any way, shape, or form. The fact that the law requires that if you discover that there is subversion taking place against the United States of America, okay, that it is your duty, okay, to report it. If you don't, you become part of the problem. You become guilty of the subversion yourself. And when you report it to some judge, like the United States Supreme Court justices, or the federal district justices, or to the President of the United States, or to the Attorney General, and when you report it to them and they do nothing, the law is clear on their status as far as being innocent or guilty of a crime, because they're guilty of the crime. They did nothing. They remained silent, and they didn't do anything. Okay? So our case has been built. And we filed 191 papers in this case, in this court case. And
but you filed it in the in, under the
about
you
to
filed,
have.
Filed it under the wrong administration, though.
Oh no, we didn't. We filed it properly. They put it in the wrong place.
I'm talking about the Clinton administration that ignored and virtually, actually threw out everybody's claims or FOIA requests or anything else.
I'm wondering if you should
take your case and resubmit it under the new administration.
No. Well, first of all, it wasn't the Clinton administration; it was the Obama administration. But
well, that's
our
what
case,
I'm talking about. I'm
but
sorry,
our case was filed.
criminals?
Our case was officially filed, okay, on December of 2016. That's when it was officially filed. Barack Obama was president at the time. January 20th of the next year, Trump took the oath and he became the president of the United States. Of all everyone, we have even filed papers to him. And there's only one person that responded to anything we've said or did, and that's the president of the United States. The president has responded with action, okay? And so, therefore, he's not even listed in this case as a defendant or a respondent, okay? We send him, any papers we send him is as an information concerning the business that we're doing. But the point is we've been building a case for 2 years. Our case is the trial has taken place. We're about ready to do what has to be done.
Well, I'm wondering if there can be, John, a re-education of the police to the police academies on this sovereign citizen issue, the obliteration or elimination of Southern Poverty Law Center. Please let me finish my questions. Please.
Go ahead.
If they get re-educated on this, because this sovereign citizen stuff, and then they come down harder on you, because once they label you that term, they actually come down harder on you. And this did not evolve until 2010, around 2010 to 2012, that term. So I'm just wondering if there can be a re-education in all these police academies. That's what that's what really needs to be done.
Well, that's an impossible task. If you want to try to win by doing that,
it's impossible. Nothing's impossible.
Well, I'm trying to tell you why. Well, if you listen, I'll tell you why it's an impossible task. The amount of time and effort to try to do that as they're being spoiled. First of all, we have communicated with over 3,000 sheriffs in the United States. There are 3,134 counties. There's about 3,000 sheriffs, a little more than that. There are about 3,000 sheriffs, okay? I'm trying to answer your question. We have communicated to all of them on a regular basis. We had fax machines, 10 fax machines running 24/7, sending out papers and information to sheriffs and a lot of elected officials on the federal level, the state level, and of course all the representatives as far as the legislators and so on and governors. But in any event, focusing in on the sheriffs, who are the true law enforcement, because police officers are political animals. They really, they're making citizens arrests ultimately because they really don't have the power and authority that they think that they have and the power and authority that they do exercise. The real power is in the sheriff, okay? So we went to educate the sheriff. They're almost uneducatable. You can't educate a sheriff because the sheriffs have been so spoiled by the poison, the venom that the Bar Association has total control. If they get a piece of paper that looks legal in any way or talks about law or the Constitution any way, they have been trained to take that right to the county attorney so that the county attorney can help them understand or whatever. And they say, don't worry, but we'll take care of this. You see, so our education, we have only ended up being able to really work with just three or four, maybe five sheriffs across the nation that have really responded and have. Trying to answer the question because it's a big question.
Wait, but if you talk to Richard Mack, there aren't that many constitutional.
I'm going to have to mute as I talk if we're going to continue like this. Let me finish the point here, and it's a long answer, and I'm sorry for that, but things are not just so simple. We can't just tweet out an answer in 10 letters or 10 words and move to the next subject. It's much more involved than that. And we got to think this out. This is a strategy. You cannot educate people if you can't capture their attention or if the devil is there whispering in their ear as you're sending them information and they're putting poison on everything you say. You can't do it. It's an impossibility to try to educate the sheriffs of this United States and think that they're going to turn things around. Okay, it's not going to happen there. But what's going to happen, what's going to fix the problems and fix the education is when the sheriffs are called into the court by the administrators of the grand jury, and those are the people that they've been calling possibly sovereign citizens, and hopefully not people with the mindset of people that are sovereign citizens, thinking that they can make certain claims, do certain things in a courtroom, say certain things, get rid of their citizenship, click their heels, and they'll be transported to Happy Land. It's not going to happen. You'll be transported to prison, because that's what happens every time. Go back, and I'm telling you, I've been in this for a long time. I've been in this since 1999. Okay, and I'm telling you, all of these people, they give. There's a lot of people teaching things that are putting lots of people in jail, and they'll let them go for a long time because they're collecting all these people and putting them in jail. But you find out at the end of the day, they end up in jail themselves because they're doing stupid things. They're doing things that are not going to work. So what we have to do is we have to do constitutional things. We have to do things that are lawful of the common law, the natural law. We have to look back into history and work with the things that we see works, which is the true law of the land, okay? So if we take back the courts, and we do that by controlling the grand juries and the trial juries, we have built a court case showing the fact that lawyers are incapable of orientating a grand or a trial jury. They're incompetent and incapable in that subject to begin with, because we're talking about courts of law and not courts of equity. Also, these lawyers and judges that control these juries are controlling them for the sole fact so that they don't end up in jail, because they're busy creating all kinds of crimes, okay, making all kinds of money, and they can't afford to lose the control of the juries because they'll all go to jail, okay? So that's why they've been holding on so long. But if we win that battle, and that's the battle we're fighting for, to take control of the courts, we want to put four administrators in every single county. And those four administrators need to be trained properly in the law. They need to understand what liberty is, what the law actually is, the difference between law and equity, the process of the court, the procedures, how things work, how to write a paper and put all the necessary information together. All of this is on-the-job training for anybody who's interested in getting into this. This is what our courses are all about. And we'll have a handbook that we're writing that will also be, they'll be able to work with that as they become the administrators. But when those four people become the administrators of that court, and they finally now open up the courts of law and totally control the process of the orientation of the grand jury and the trial jury, now you're going to have true law. And once true law is being applied in the courts, that's when the sheriffs will become educated. Because we will teach, and we do teach this already, but maybe we don't talk about it often, but once the process is set in place, the first order of business is to make that phone call to the sheriff. And with four individuals who are the administrators for the grand jury and the trial jury, sitting in that courtroom, that in that county, for that state courtroom, whatever we call it, the Supreme Court here in New York, Every county has a New York State Supreme Court, okay? When they come down and they talk to the individuals who are the control of the juries, okay, and they talk to the sheriff, and they tell the sheriff, you don't know the Constitution, or they ask them a few questions, and they reveal to them that they don't know the Constitution. Mr. Sheriff or Mrs. Sheriff, you have a problem. You have raised your hand and took an oath to protect and uphold that Constitution, and you don't understand it. You're applying equity laws, you know, statutes against the people when you should be applying the Constitution against the bureaucrats. Okay? Yeah, if someone's out there and they break someone's window and try to steal something or something like that, yeah, you know, you arrest them. But the real thing is they're constitutional officers of the court. So now you tell the sheriff, look at, you got to get a course. Here's a copy of the Constitution. You give him a handbook. Okay? You go get go out here and take this course on the Constitution. We have a course called Consent of Government, and that's the course that every sheriff needs to take. And at the end of the day, now you'll know the law. Don't be talking to the – if you're going to go talk to a lawyer every time you got to figure out what you got to do, then why don't you just give them the badge, because you're no longer – you're not the sheriff. You're not working for the people. You're working for that lawyer. And he hasn't worked to get that position, and he's taking control of your position. He's taking control of everything. You see, that's when you get that kind of control, okay? And you do that with everyone that gets elected. Same thing. You're raising your hand. You're swearing to uphold and protect the Constitution and to enforce it and so on and so forth, okay? And yet you don't know it. You need to take this course. And when we build the people through, we need another 15,000, 20,000 people across the nation to fill the positions for the committeemen. And once that's done, then we take control of all of the people that get onto the ballot. Because if they don't know the Constitution, look it, go to this website, take the course, learn the Constitution, then come back and talk to us, and we'll see if we'll carry your papers. You see, you take control of the consent of government. You do that by taking control of the political process through the committeeman process, and you elected committeeman. You take control of the courts through the juries, and now people truly have consent of government. Because when government steps out of line, you can either recall them 90 days they're out of office, or you can indict them and in days they're out of office. You see, that's control. And now you can apply the law and make it work, and you can teach it in schools, and you can move it through the process, and you can move it through. If towns want to have a town police and a state police, that's fine. But I will tell you one thing. The day that the law is applied in this nation is the day that town cops are going to disappear, city cops will disappear, with the exception of big cities, of course. But town cops are going to disappear, village cops are going to disappear. All those stations are going to disappear. Why? Because their cash register machine's going to shut down, because they won't be able to make all their money sending swarms of agents out into the streets to give all these code violations so they can rake in all this money, because that's all it's about, okay, and rake in all this money. Well, when they can't do that anymore, they won't be able to support that court, and they won't be able to support that police force. And then you'll be left back to where it belongs, okay, ultimately the sheriff and maybe the state police. I don't like the idea of the state police either, and maybe that'll fall away too, and the sheriff will take control of the whole process within that county, which is what should be done. But, you know, people can hire a private police police service. You can go into a gated community, and they hire their own, police service set up there, you know, and they have guns, and they can arrest you. Still a citizen's arrest, no matter how you go about it, okay? And because ultimately the arrest is done in the court and should be done by the sheriff ultimately anyway. But there's not enough sheriff. They don't have enough money and power behind them. But if all these other police forces disappear, they'll become much stronger, and they'll be able to take the cream of the crop, and they'll be able to do what they have to do to police the area. But they'll also be relieved. There'll be a lot of relief in the prisons and in the courts and in the police service and everything, because all these code writings would stop, okay? And injuries will be the things that will take precedence. If someone injures then they have to do it. But my point, let me just finish the final point. Here's the point. You can't educate people to bring in this subject matter to bring things back to where it belongs. It's an endless thing. The enemy will be there destroying everything. And you won't be able to even talk to these people. We have spent a lot of time doing this, and we only had about four or five sheriffs that ever responded positively to us in the four or so years we've been doing this with the, you know, sending out faxes and stuff. But when you take control of the courts and you force them into the process, either you give up your job or you learn the Constitution. Don't go to this lawyer here to deal with a lawful problem. You're the one that has to figure it out. You're the one we gave the badge to. You're the one that people voted for you to have that badge to protect them. So know the Constitution or resign your job. They'll learn it.
Okay. Can I just add to that? If the president removes himself from the Article II United States, Inc., is declared unlawful, and liquidated, and he declares national sovereignty for the people, raises the United States note, which is about to be announced, our United States note backed by gold, announces the sovereignty of all the American people, then we resurrect the common law, the real common law, and no more commercial.
Wait,
can I just finish my point, please?
Go ahead.
Because it's about to happen, I know that for a fact. And so automatically the common law gets resurrected, and the Constitution,
automatically,
constitutional courts will be implemented. Of course, federal judges are now being mandated to go back for constitutional law.
And
now,
who's going to implement those judges? Who's going to implement the knowledge of the Constitution?
Can you let me finish my point now?
Because but this isn't your program. This is a program to really get people involved.
I'm trying to tell you that if the common law comes, because that's the court of record, if the common law courts are resurrected, and they will be, then the commercial maritime courts are obliterated. And that's where you were talking about citations and cops. That's what the cops are for, the tribunal and the network of corruption between cops attorneys and prosecutors and the federal judges as grantors.
I'm going to have to mute you if you don't hang on for a second, please, because you've been on for quite a
time.
You've got a lot of poison out here, and I'm trying to clean it up. It's after midnight now. We've got to close. Yes.
Poison?
Look, if you think that all of this stuff, okay, that you're talking about, you're talking about the president coming up and resigning his corporate position. The president doesn't have a corporate position. That's in the minds of people. That's fiction. And that's the process and the picture they built for someone.
U.S. Inc. is a corporation. Who are you talking? What are you talking about? States Incorporated is a corporation.
I'm going to have to mute you in order to take control of this conversation if you're not going to hold on, okay? Because you've brought up enough information here that, and we can't even cover all of these subjects. But you're looking at the thing, it's a fraud. The whole thing is a fraud. You don't have to deal with trying to shut down a corporation. You've been visiting too many of these websites, and all of these people, if you look back into the history, you'll find they're all going to jail, and they're getting people in trouble. They're going into courts, and they're causing more trouble and more problems because their solutions that they're offering to these people don't work. It doesn't mean that the position isn't right. I understand that we've been violated and they've tried to take this whole process over, and it all really stems back ultimately to the Organic Act of 1871. And it goes back further than that. We know that. It goes all the way back to 1776. As soon as they realized that America was breaking away, they already started putting stuff in here to really sort of screw things up for us and to cause problems and to infiltrate. They've been infiltrating us from the very beginning. Amongst our founding fathers were some of the enemies. And some of those people who are enemies may not even have known that they're enemies. Okay, but they've already been poisoned in their thinking, all right? And to think that a president has to do something with the fiction by responding to the fiction empowers them, because you just gave them power. Every time you walk into a courtroom and you go through this process, maybe you go and you get rid of your driver's license. Maybe you get rid of your Social Security, your birth certificate. Maybe you become a nationalist. I forget what they call it. I guess it's a nationalist. Then you put your declaration into your county and all these things, all these burdens upon people that have, and they need these things to survive in the world that's operating today. Tomorrow's world, maybe we don't need it. And we have to fix that problem, and that's going to take time. But let's capture back the control of this country. And there's only two ways that it could be done. Both need to be exercised. You need to take back, the people need to take back the control of the courts. That's number one. And the people need to take back the control of the committeeman process that puts these people onto the ticket. And when the people control those two power structures, they then control the nation. They now are they got the steering wheel back, okay? But until you capture those two power structures, you have nothing. And to fight anything else is like going out and urinating on a huge bonfire thinking you're going to put it out. It's not going to happen that way. And meanwhile, all these people telling these stories and telling how much success they've had, and yeah, just go in there and tell the judge this and tell the judge that, and they get these people in bigger trouble and more problems, okay? I've been visited by at least five different federal investigations in my home and I've met the federal agents outside of my home. And the first order of business that they had started talking to me about sovereign citizens. Okay, and I responded to them to the, on my understanding that a sovereign citizen is a cop killer. I'm not a cop killer. I have nothing to do with sovereign citizens. Am I sovereign? Well, you know, I learned that I'm sovereign. God tells me I'm sovereign. The Constitution tells me that I'm sovereign. The Bill of Rights tells me that I'm sovereign. The Declaration of Independence tells me I'm sovereign. Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, all these people tell me I'm sovereign. They claim to be sovereign, so I guess I'm sovereign. I'm a free person. I'm sovereign. Why not? Am I a citizen? Of course I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm a citizen of, and that's the other thing that people run away from, you know. And in the Constitution, we the people gave the ability to Congress to set the necessary rules in order to have people come in and become citizens, okay? And you're a citizen. They do it on a federal level, but you're a citizen of whatever state you decide to live in, okay? And you can change that citizenship anytime you want. But being a citizen does not put us under any kind of statutory process. That's the norm. That is true because most constitutions that are written by the, you know, the tyrants. They're the ones that write the Constitution. The United States is the only nation that has a constitution written by, for, and for the people. And that's our Constitution. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for you, for them. And that's where the power is. And that's where people need to understand to take control of the courts, to take control of their elected individuals by chaining them down or tying them down with the chains of the Constitution, as Jefferson put it. Okay? So you're not going to win the battle by using magical words in a court. They laugh at you, by the way. And you're certainly going to get yourself in more trouble if you don't understand how the system works and how the process goes. Once that judge, if you're on a federal court, and once that judge understands that you don't have a clue in what you're talking about, you're done. You are fried. It's over with. So if people are going to go into that court, you better do some education or go get yourself a lawyer. Unfortunately, you're not going to find many good lawyers that will really represent you correctly. And even the good ones, they're threatened too. So you got to go in pro se. But again, you know, you go into the local courts, the traffic courts and everything. Can you win? Absolutely. We can teach people how to win in those courts. But if you're going to end up in a federal court in order to win, because it has to be a constitutional violation. And that's what they do to you. They don't give you due process. They don't have jurisdiction. They're denying you both. And so therefore you take it through that process and you have to get up at the federal court, which is their duty to protect you. They don't have a choice in that. That's one of their duties, is to protect the people who have been violated by the lower courts. And you got to make them do that. And you got to, and again, if you go in there and you don't know what you're doing, you don't know the process, you don't know how they're thinking, and everything is already set up statutory in it anyway. So that's another major problem, which we have a plan to how to change that with the next filing on how we're going to go about this. But, you know, look at, you can't go through this stuff and trying to make the president say, well, I got to resign from the corporation. I mean, that's just empowering the quote-unquote corporation to begin with. President of the United States, President of the United States, not the corporation that they created. I know they created one. They've done a lot of things. It's all fraud. It's illegal. Don't play in their sandbox. Let's get into the Constitution. Let's make them play in our sandbox. And when you go in and you use the proper you know, tools like the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, history, and so on, and you take that into the court and you keep them constantly in on the defensive, okay? You're on the offense, they're on the defense. As long as they're on the defense, you're winning. If you're on the defense, you got a problem. You're losing. And they put us in defense constantly. They have a lot of tricks to do this. Rule 12 is one way that they've done it. We understand now how to get around that. Okay, but Rule 12 is a big thing that they use in order to throw us out of the courts so they don't have to answer. Don't give them power by telling them that you're going to acknowledge their authorities and therefore you're going to do this and you're going to do that and you're going to do the other thing in order to separate yourself from them. What you're doing is empowering them.
Right, anyway. The common law. you automatically eliminate statutory commercial courts. You have to resurrect
common law. How many people know what the
courts.
Common law is? What is the common law?
It's the court of record. It's the people's court.
What is it?
What you have to do is
tell me what the
people,
common law
there's
is.
No judge in a common law court. There's no attorney practicing in a common law court. You are the record. So under the Constitution, the common law resurrects itself. And the commercial maritime BS courts are obsolete.
The common law is not under the Constitution. The common law creates the Constitution.
Fine, but the common law court. You said you want to take control of the courts.
Yeah, but
I'm
people
saying
don't know.
That you answered your own question.
But people
That's
don't
how you
have
take
to
control
do that.
Of the courts.
But people don't know how to do that, and they don't even know what the common law is. Okay, they don't even know what the Constitution is. You can't do a lot of these things. One person, two people, three people can do it maybe, but here or there. But you need lots of people doing it. It's not going to happen. That's not how we can win.
Okay,
we
okay.
win by taking back.
I'm done. Okay, John. Thanks. I really appreciate what you had to say. But thanks
All
very
right.
much.
Thank okay. You. Thank you. All right. It's way after midnight, so we're going to close down. There's still people in the queue. Quite a few people in the queue, unfortunately, but we'll pick back up next Monday, Lord willing. We'll see you then. And again, hopefully we'll have the papers done by next Monday, and maybe we'll start reading some of them. And, well, it's one paper. Maybe we'll start reading it next week or maybe the week after. But we'll figure that out. Let's see how this week goes. And again, if anybody can volunteer to serve some of these papers, all you have to do is print them out and mail them in for us with the proper return address on it and the proper address to individuals, and then make sure that we get a copy of the receipt. We'd appreciate that. We do have a couple of hundred people we'd like to serve, so we need as much help as we can. We'll get more details about that next Monday. Anybody interested, get a hold of Jan. Jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. Let them know you're interested to help out, and he'll put you on the list. Make sure you give him your name and phone number in that email. Thanks, everybody. Good night.